I just felt like she was swinging it. Like, why
are yeah. You? So here's the thing about people like that.
Uh-huh.
I'm an acquired taste. I'm like Greg Light. Like, yeah, like, whereas 90% of women hate Greg, only 50, 60% hate me. Yep. And she's one of those people who is, you know, like social climbers, and I don't get along well for just because it's like to be in my presence is to be near things that shouldn't be said a lot of times, you know, and it is
polite company.
And so somebody who works in corporate social media, like at first they're like, ooh, Bob and Tom, wow, social media director, I want some of that juice. But yeah. Then they find out it's, you know, grapefruit juice, mm-hmm. not pineapple. They're like, I don't know about that. Mm-hmm. There's just a little bit of, so because I say things that, you know, because of this and because of Bob and Tom, and because I was always like that. When I was at the LPIN, I was very careful about what I would say and not say, and social media like was very vanilla, mm-hmm. you know, and it was just like all, I mean, there wasn't even the group chat, so there wasn't that much like shenanigans going on in my life. But, you know, meeting you guys, I think kind of really.
Yeah, pretty much.
So, but yeah, corporate people like that don't like me.
I don't feel like she, like, it wasn't even like she, it just, it's, like she just kept swinging well, to prove her worth over yours. Like, she was trying to,
right.
She kept, like, I'm better than him.
Well, she was trying, yeah, she's an expert. And
you didn't read this article, you don't really know social media. And I was like, man, Spangles is jujitsuing all over her.
Well, the thing is she represents the common point of view, the echo chamber, but it's not right. You know, it's sort of that same like thing that everybody says, but that it's like everybody keeps saying about Kavanaugh, he's innocent until proven guilty. It's like nobody's saying he's guilty. Mm-hmm. Like it's you're just saying words out of your face and they don't mean anything. You know, the Russians, we need to be very careful about our elections. Yeah, okay. Right. Nobody disagrees with that, but it's not really an issue. It's like, I'm cool. going to do a Chris Spangle show in the Hillary interview at the Lesbians in Tech conference.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, she's treasonous. I'm going to go on Twitter and just write, treason!
If you want some coffee, there's coffee.
Would you like coffee? Would okay. you got water? Would you like any water?
Come on. It is strong. You may want to cut it with hot water.
I'm fine with the water.
I made coffee at work, and it's like, ooh, I'm going to cut this with weaker coffee.
Update firmware.
Sales guys are putting like, they were drinking, and they were putting like their flashlights on. I was like, what? What is that? That's coffee? Where? It's like, your light's just being sucked in by it. It's okay. That happens. But yeah, it's... It really felt like, and a lot of times she was bringing stuff up, and she just had this general opinion, but she didn't really know. You know, she kind of like proved your point every right. time she opened her mouth. And then the whole idea is like, well, it's like, come on, you do the social media thing. You really think like a $70,000 beats $8 billion in ads? If so, what kind of wooj are these Russian bots doing?
Right. You should be studying them.
Right. I want to study these Russian bots because... Return on investment. Woof. Man, I didn't know Russia was the social media kingpins of the world.
Crap.
You know, if they're really so good, we wouldn't know.
History.
Oh, great.
Too perfect. Do you use Simple Note? Simple Note is like the best note-taking thing ever. Mm-hmm. It's built by the WordPress people. So it's like pure cloud-based plain text. And so like you don't need to – I wouldn't code in it. You can keep code in it. But like for all the hyperlinks and stripping out all the formatting of websites and copying – that's so good.
You know it does that really good?
What?
Dropbox Paper and Google –
Google copies formatting, but Dropbox paper is really nice.
Yeah, I like Dropbox for collaboration. We've like the entire IT and engineering department. We use Dropbox paper just to collaborate on documents, and we use it for like our purchasing stuff because it's very, it's simple. You know, it's a yeah. Now everything else, you know, we actually do in documents like that. We'll put that in Word and just you know go through yeah. there. But for yeah, the saving things, the collaborating, yeah.
No, the I almost used Dropbox paper for the research team, but it was like it's just these. Everybody's going to use Google.
So you want to get a Google Docs for the Google G Suite for the research team?
Where do you have a folder, a shared folder?
I'll talk about
if you actually you know engaged in any of it. You notice that, but
what the no, I see that you have the folder, but talking about like the G Suite umbrella, then we have
check.
To do like a shared and like count. We have to have be able to. Access each other's shared work calendars for it, and
nah, I don't need to spend more money. That's really what it comes down to. It's like I don't need $5 per user. It's not worth it. Oh, we're so handsome.
I like it.
You ever see video of yourself? You ever see video of yourself and just go, ugh.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Yes, I have. Oh.
Like, I'm gorgeous.
Ugh.
Oh, man, I feel bad. I got a message. Someone's like, ask me, hey, do you know where I can get an LC to SC fiber octave cable right now? It's in Indiana. Fries, that's your best luck. And they are short. I had to do that one time, and they gave me, like, a 1 meter cable. So I had to take the firewall off the rack, walk it over to the fiber connection, and plug it in and stack it on a chair and go, woohoo, we're connected. We're back. We're back online. Which everyone in like California thinks is hilarious. Like you guys can get everything, but like electronic parts. Like yeah, this stuff sucks.
We're meant to be in nature and be natural, and this is where we find the source that God made to transcend the new world order. And that's why they want to try to keep us out of it.
I'm angry. I've had enough of these people. Little bones of Christian murderers, scum, melon giant death factories, keeping babies alive. Selling that body parts. What more do you need to know about these people? I go out and face these scum. They literally crawl out from under rocks. They have green looking skin. And they run around screaming, we love Satan, we wanna eat babies. I have them on video. Hillary's in the creepy weird six stuff, man. She sleeps in the same room with that creepy weird woman whose mother wears a hood over her head.
What the hell?
That woman number one is ugly. Imagine how bad she smells, man. I'm told her and Obama just stink. Obama and Hillary both smell like sulfur.
Well, didn't he say good for God with what?
My spirit gets close to that evil land I fear to go. We're such self-centered crap. We don't even know this hand it's out rising up against
the personal responsibility. Why you need to read more.
It just frustrates me how few people actually like try. Smart people too, like intelligent people. You don't even try to read anything.
I would say she's dumb. Yeah, she was just punching outside of her death. She should have asked the questions and make a statement. So I got here on the auction, which is perfect for Spangle. 2003 Ford 250 turbo diesel pickup truck. we'll get this thing. It probably doesn't run, but it'd be great for Tinder.
I'm so blessed, Craig, to have so many helping people in my life.
What? I'm just saying.
The funny thing right? about the yes. funny thing about Jeremiah and Harry
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
is I just can't. They won't leave me. They won't leave me alone. It's oh, I made a decision. I'm very happy about it. This is why you're stupid.
I don't say that you're stupid.
Just you I'm make just, a lot of bad decisions.
Here's why that decision is wrong.
Yeah. Okay, I do that. Or
you really wanted to do something a lot more complicated that would have cost a lot more money and work half the time.
I don't think I would say stuff like that. Most of my stuff works all the time. Okay. All right.
Most of the time.
Yeah. And it would work as soon as I get you out of this Apple ecosystem. Once we, get the studio and then you can just be in charge of, like, the audio equipment and then we can get you out of everything else, it'd be great. Get out of this, get more of an open ecosystem so things just work with things. It'd be great.
Check 1, 2. Oh. Too much me. Okay. All right. And I don't know why it just always takes this long. I don't know why it takes so long, but it just always takes us a long time to get started.
Wouldn't be this issue if this was in that room over there. And
yeah, it would be. It'd be the exact same issue.
Could we try?
No. Nope.
Also, I got this Murphy's bed here. I've been looking for you. Or what if we, okay, radical idea, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You get to keep your table, okay?
Yes.
Put it in there, and we give you a sleeping bag, and you just sleep underneath the table like an air mattress, like one of the quick air ones they fluff up, and then you can still sleep in there. I know you're considering the...
I'm thinking about it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm filing it away.
Okay.
I'm putting it in the appropriate bins. A lot of really good... Helpful. I definitely want to read this one.
Helpful. Oh, you're talking about that. Oh.
Yeah, I want to read this one. This one... I want to read this one. We'll start with this one.
Why is that room? Would that room be better?
This way it's self-contained. And it won't have the distractions of the rest of the house. This way when he walks in there, it's...
It's where my bed is.
He would go to work. He's used to working in that room. So I figured...
I sit here once a week. You know what I mean? Like, I'm in there... Hours a day. Okay, we're going to read this one.
Works. Spend 8 hours a night in there working.
I think the rest of this is just obscure Pentagon. Mark Judge.
Yeah, and then it'd be, like I said, it'd be its own self-contained room. He can paint the walls green for green screen. He wouldn't need his sheet thing.
I'd have to have them come out and paint it.
Why?
Because that's their regulation. Their regulation is that if you want to paint, you can, but they have to paint it.
Kind of squirrely.
This apartment complex is run by libertarians. That's why nothing makes sense and everything isn't working.
I don't thought about libertarians running this place.
Okay, so we got that stuff there.
Yeah. It'd be free market power. Someone's like
for round
birded
two.
Geese for electricity.
Derek. This here. Oof.
after I left you guys last night, when I went to go to my car, wouldn't believe who I got to see in the parking garage but my director of finance of the company was just leaving work.
Yep.
And he's like, what are you doing here? Just leaving work. That's good. But he's in from town from New York, so I gave him a ride to his hotel. Mm. Yep.
Okay. All right. There you got that. Okie dokie. All right.
Yeah. He's the guy that like really lives in New York, but files all his taxes inside of Indianapolis. Oh. Lives in Indianapolis.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I want you to work.
What's that?
I don't want
now.
You to
is he? Does he claim that he does all of his work in Indianapolis?
Majority of his work. Is
okay,
Indianapolis.
Because I know, like for athletes and such, if they play a game in New York, they get taxed for that particular game.
Yeah. Well, we don't have New York. Taxes. We don't have an office.
Oh, you don't have an office in New York. York. Okay.
So
okay.
All of his work usually happens there.
So it's comedians have to pay taxes in like 50 cities.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy. 50 states, I mean.
I would refuse.
That, see, the funny thing about the government, when especially a comedian, mm-hmm. who meet a comedian today at the studio, mm-hmm. left with a bag full of goodies, pop, soda, all kinds of stuff. They don't have any money, so when the government says you need to pay, and they can't fight it, really.
You just keep driving. You just keep, you know. Only established ones, you have to pay. You just keep going. I doubt most of those, some of the, you know, especially when you're coming up, I doubt a lot of those clubs that would, you know, especially if they put me on stage, I doubt they keep good tax records anyways.
What is it? Is your comedy too edgy or?
It sucks. I think I've got 30 minutes material. I'd run out in two.
New policy. If I have to belch, I'm belching.
What? No.
If you have to,
that's
you
the 2019 have to, dear leader contract.
If you have to fart, you fart. There was a news article today that if you don't release your gas, then it causes diverticulitis. And so this podcast is slowly killing me.
Those are acceptable odds. I'm sure wall management would be acceptable.
We need to do an interview with wall management at some point. I don't want to work. I just want to bang on the drum all day. I need this to work. My SD reader doesn't really work that well.
But I finally got my Zen Center to fail over correctly on my controller software. So I set up the networks. We use this goofy unified controller system that controls all the networks. Well, like, the idea, the goal is to put the center one of all locations in one spot, but fail over to the other ones. So, like, Dallas has got there now, the Indy facility, and now mine is finally up. So now if mine goes down, mine is, like, we'll first try to turn on in the Indy facility. If it can't turn on there, fails there because there's no resources, it'll instantly go down to Dallas and turn on there. Mm. And the exact same if Dallas can't turn on, it kicks up here to Indy and tries to turn on.
Any idea what he said, Craig? Any idea?
It's a backup system of some kind.
Yes.
It was so funny because at dinner last night, at one point, Craig just looked at Harry and goes, I have no idea what you're talking about. I go, this is every Tuesday for me.
Because that looks like you're so interested. Like, sweetie. Keep going. Yeah.
I like Harry, so I pretend to know what he's talking about when he starts talking about things at work. But usually I only understand when he's making people mad. Then I don't understand why, but I understand that he is.
Which now I find as the real reason I have an office, just so people can close the door.
And contain you in it?
Yeah. So they were like, you know, like, because when we first moved in the office, there really was no spot to put me. So I set the sales area.
And they got to know you.
And they were like, no, you can't sit over here. You make too much noise. We can't have your drill going off. What? You can't really hear that. Yeah, we can't. You can't be here.
That's amazing.
See, this area is completely full. There's nowhere I can sit. And then the ops and engineering team, they want to be able to... The 10 spots they have, they don't use them all the time, but mm-hmm. they want the option, if need be, to be able to move to those 10 spots at any time. I've seen them use it twice like that. So I got kicked out of there. So the only place was left to go was a spare office that no one went into, so I moved in there. And because they didn't really make a spot for me, they didn't want to buy a cubicle for me. And the person that was running the thing assumed I was going to move into the server closet. windowless room.
I'm angry.
But yeah, I'm slowly realizing the only reason they put me in there so they can close the door. That's what the HR director did, was trying to ask me like one question about Slack and just went and just closed the door because I kept going.
Okay.
As much as I start using Slack, I started to like it, and then that curve just started to turn down. I was like, wow, I'm starting to hate this platform.
All right, let's give a mic check here. Craig, how are you?
I'm doing fine, Chris. How are you?
Very good. You sound very clear. I like that. Okay, good. Harry, how are you tonight?
Going good. I'm going really good. Got my coffee. I got my seltzer water.
Yeah, but your seltzer water is Kroger brand. That's a little downtown for you, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a little inexpensive. I just, like I said, I had to spend $12,000 on the house.
You got to cut where you can. Yeah, I get it.
The low-key wall studios to be, you know, perfect. No. Should I?
You don't hear me fuzzing?
I actually don't hear
fuzz.
Oh. Which one are you on?
Fuzz. Yeah. All right. I think that's a lot better. Okay. Yeah,
I could hear music you were playing earlier, but I can't.
You can't hear me
coming out of your mouth.
Yeah, I can barely hear myself, and I'm scared to turn it up because the music was, you know, considerably louder. Let's see, maybe.
So you can't hear me, Harry. Why don't you?
Let's see, it's on A. Are we in A?
I'm angry. You should get everything coming out of the board. Regardless.
You got this plugged in the B.
Check 1-2, check 1-2, check 1-2, check 1-2.
Did you plug this in B in the rear?
Check 1-2. How about now?
Now, yeah.
Okay. All right, cool. Let's do a little test on this then.
All right, let's get back to some
too hot
subjects.
Understand the risk to our country.
Listening to the We Are Libertarians Network. Learn more at wearelibertarians.com.
How about that?
This is good. That's better. That's so much better.
Yeah. All right. See, there's still that darn fuzz, and it has to be me hitting too much gain over here. So yeah, that's very good. All right. Great to be here today. Great to be with you. Wonder why that changed so much. All right, that should be good enough.
Mittens podcast.
Mittens. I know. Nobody touches anything. I don't even use this setup half the time when I'm doing the Chris Spangle show, but for whatever reason, things have been changing, switching around.
But,
see? I'm saving my own life. All right, you ready?
Ready.
All right, we're going to go live. Any questions? You've seen enough of these that you should be fine.
All right.
What do I want to do first? We're going live on the big page, by the way.
What?
With
this topic? It's going to be awful.
It's going to be real bad. It's going to be so brutal. But that's why I want to do it.
I'm going pure libertarian and calling you a statist the entire time. Everyone likes me.
Oh, this is going to be awesome. And it's going to go on my page, too. Sweet. I'm angry.
The paradigm of absolute control. The paradigm of absolute control. And that's why we're just out here doing simple things, pointing out that we're meant to be in nature and be natural. And this is where we find the source that God made to transcend the New World Order. And that's why they want to try to keep us out of it.
I'm angry. I've had enough of these people. Little bones of Christian murderers, scum. They're on giant death factories, keeping babies alive and selling their body parts. What more do you need to know about these people? I go out and face these scum. They literally crawl out from under rocks. They have green looking skin and they run around screaming, we love Satan, we wanna eat babies.
Something Wong Ho Li Fook.
All right. We are live. Here we go.
All right, let's get back to some boring subjects.
Understand the risk to our country.
Freedom brings people together.
You're listening to the We Are Libertarians Network. Learn more at wearelibertarians.com.
Welcome to We Are Libertarians. My name is Chris Spangle, and you're listening to We Are Libertarians, episode 316, recorded on September 18th, 2018. I'm your host, Chris Spangle. I think I already said that. Tonight, we'll be covering the Kavanaugh allegations. We'll be covering a police shooting in Dallas. And as always, Undercover News, where we'll cover $2 billion just magically appeared in Pentagon bank accounts. So stay tuned.
Warning, this show is for adults, produced by semi-adults, so the language is sometimes strong and offensive.
I don't know what I said,
Welcome to We Are Libertarians, where our goal is to help you sound smarter while talking to your friends. We examine current events from a libertarian perspective while treating modern politics with all of the irreverence it deserves.
There has been lie after lie.
We toss out the screaming heads, put people before political parties, and give context to the news to make you think. Now, here's our host, a 15-year veteran of politics and media, Chris Spangle.
All right. Welcome back to the program. It is so nice to have you. It's so nice to be back in the studio with all of my friends, mainly Craig DaCosta, but I guess we'll talk to Harry, too. Harry, how are you?
Going good, going good.
It's nice to see you. It feels like we haven't done this in so long because I was sick last week.
Yeah, like a whole week or something.
I know, 2 weeks. Never let it happen again.
Well, like I did a low-key wall episode, and I did threaten to come over to just to force you to do an episode, but you sounded awful.
I did. I did not feel well. I fell asleep at like 8:30 that night, so I was just not feeling it, and I wasn't that well prepared anyway, so it was like it was going to be a bad show, so I decided to cancel it. But this is a great show. This is a great episode. Mainly because we have one of our best friends here on the program, one of the people responsible for the growth of the program, one of our biggest contributors, and part of the Emperor's Circle at $100 a month on Patreon. It is our good friend Craig DaCosta, all the way from Hawaii. Craig, thanks for being here.
Oh, thanks for having me here, Chris.
Yeah, it's you came into town yesterday,
yes.
And we went out to a fancy dinner, and we had... We had a really good time, even with Jeremiah there from the Boss Hog of Liberty. He didn't ruin dinner, did he?
He tried, though.
Yeah. No, of course he tried. I mean, but we didn't let him.
Correct, yeah.
Yes. So, now, what is it like to visit the United States?
It's great, Chris. I usually take one vacation on what we call the mainland.
Right.
Since I'm from Hawaii. Always try to drive around and see as much as I can.
Yeah. So now, do you have to have a passport when you come in from Hawaii?
No, we've actually been a state since 1959.
No shit.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we were a country.
I was not aware of that. I'm surprised to hear that. Can we talk to whomever made that possible?
Keep them on the line.
So we basically spent hours last night grilling Craig about what it's like to live in Hawaii, as if it was a foreign nation. He was basically Japanese to us. We were like, so do you have water there? I don't think we made any jokes about you getting laid. No jokes about... You know, did you do wear a grass skirt? None of that kind of stuff. Do you get a lot of that when you come over to America?
You know, not so much anymore. I think a lot of people know a little bit more about Hawaii with whether it be from TV shows or vacations or military service.
Right.
But my brother was in the army in 1970s, and he had some people fooled about living in grass shacks and girls running around with hula skirts.
Have you seen Moana?
Yes.
Okay. Is it basically a documentary?
Not at all.
Okay. All right. It's an enjoyable movie, and having a 2- and a 4-year-old niece, I've seen it roughly 8,000 times, but I enjoy it, so it seems like a good program. Yeah. Now we're live on the big page. We're live on the big We Are Libertarians page because this is a hot topic with lots of misinformation out there. And we, as always, have a unique perspective. So expect the comments to be brutal. Go and watch those. Harry, when I told him we were going to live to the big page, your reaction was what?
It was like, I was groaning, and then I decided to go, like, I'm going to go hardline libertarian this one, just so everyone likes me. So, and a question from the chat, someone asked, do you like spam?
No, I do not like spam.
What?
I eat spam one way, and that's a spam musubi. It has seaweed wrapped around rice and spam. I don't eat much rice anymore, so I haven't had one in a while.
Okay, so what else do you eat? Just fish, pineapple, and rice?
Lots of fish. Again, not so much rice. I think pineapple is overused.
Okay.
I think if you eat pineapple with just a little bit of salt, that's the perfect way to eat it. Fresh pineapple with a little bit of salt. Mostly, like I said, fish and a lot of pork products.
Jeremiah, last night, our friends from the Boss Hog of Liberty, which you're a big fan of the Boss Hog of Liberty. It's about Newcastle, Indiana, but you listen in Hawaii, you really enjoy it. Why is that?
I'm from a small town county of Kauai. So we're away from the big city, and so a lot of the issues that they're dealing with, we've kind of already dealt with, or I can see us having to deal with it.
And so, you know, Jer and Dakota were there. And halfway through dinner, Jeremiah just looks at him and goes, how do you have electricity in Hawaii?
Yeah.
Like, I was joking, but he was dead serious. And to which I replied, they just burn coconuts. That's their main fuel source. And I guess I didn't even think about it. I mean, everything on Hawaii must be, like, super complicated. And, you know, you live away from probably where the airport is. So, like, you have to take a plane to get to the airport from where you're at?
No. Well, we have to take a plane to go inter-island.
Okay.
The only ferry system that they have right now is actually between the Maui, Molokai, Lanai islands because they're closer together.
Right.
But the other islands are far enough apart where you have to take a plane. And then so all islands now have direct flights to cities on the mainland. But the better flights are if you fly from Kauai to Honolulu and then
right
to the mainland.
Very cool. Well, we're very glad that you're here. Hopefully we've not disappointed you.
No, not at all.
All right. We will. Don't worry.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Just wait.
Give us time.
Yeah. I mean, there's still many hours left in the show.
Yeah.
Many, many hours left on this episode.
And he's kind of right. Like the whole pineapple with a little bit of salt. Like if you ever did like the pineapple encrusted like salt and just cook it like that on a barbecue, it's actually very good.
Put them in your fajitas. Your fajitas. Okay, so let's get to the topics. Let's talk about Brett Kavanaugh, the man nominated for the Supreme Court. And I'm going to warn you, if you're a Republican or a Democrat and you just outright are part of those tribes and don't have your thinking caps on, you're probably going to hate everything that we're going to say. Because I don't know how or why or when, and maybe you guys can tell me, but it seems like at some point the rational thinking way to approach something like this, which is, I don't know anything, so I'm going to keep my mouth shut and wait for some facts, has become the outrageous position in American life today, and I don't get it whatsoever.
Well, that's because you don't have any passion. You have to come up with your opinions right as you read the title.
Okay.
And then just stay with them no matter what the facts come out. You just keep dig your heels in.
I listen to Ben Shapiro every day because I listen to Democracy Now! Every day because I listen to things other than just libertarian news sources because I feel that if I want to approach a subject like this, I want to know what everybody's saying. And I got to be honest, like, it's funny to hear Shapiro Friday completely trash this woman and then try to walk that back the last couple days as more information has come out, and it makes it look like she's probably it's at least true to her.
Correct.
You know,
correct.
What she's saying seems at least true to her. And I should also say, right at the outset, you are a lawyer, Craig. So I'm very glad that you were here because you understand the legal system. What's your legal background?
Okay. I spent 12 years at the prosecutor's office on Kauai, the last four as the elected prosecutor. Then I retired from that and went into private practice, and I've been in private practice for the last 9 years.
Okay. So you were speaking with your opinion only, not those of whatever court you may be, you know, but so... you are not the official attorney of We Are Libertarians no. yet until something terrible happens with a drifter 5 years from now. Either me or Harry, who knows? So yes, I'm glad that you're here because, you know, we're talking about a lot of heady subjects between this story and the Dallas police shooting. And, you know, as a prosecutor, I'm going to pick your brain as we kind of move through this about what would be the standard of how would you judge this as a prosecutor? What facts would you look for? And feel free to jump in at any time because we move kind of fast here. And, you know, here on the mainland, everything's probably much quicker than Hawaii.
A lot faster here.
Yeah. You're like, what's the biggest difference between the mainland and Hawaii? He's like, interstates. You guys drive so fast. So I wanted to make sure that you all understand that we've got someone here with a legal mind because I think that that plays into it. But just let's set the table and let's kind of give you some information. First and foremost, for all of our bias hunters out there, as I have said on the program, and I think you may have said as well, Harry, and I don't know what your opinion of Brett Kavanaugh has been. I'll ask you in a moment. But Kavanaugh, to me, was good enough. I wasn't jumping over joy. I mean, you know, Neil Gorsuch was such a win because he was in, you know, he had written for Cato, for instance, and he's been good on the court. And Brett Kavanaugh, to me, seemed like someone who wasn't going to make a lot of waves, but he was good on the administrative state. He was good on cutting bureaucracy and he seemed like a fairly good choice. And I have not been unsupportive. I've said that if I were a senator, I would vote for him.
He's qualified.
I think that's a good way to put it. We did an episode where we kind of outlined the process, the role of a Supreme Court justice, our opinions on Brett Kavanaugh back when he was first selected. So if you want more information on our opinion on Kavanaugh, go and listen to that. We're going to talk more about the accuser's story and the politics of this than we are Brett Kavanaugh because we've already done an episode on it. So you can go and listen to that stuff. But What is your opinion of Brett Kavanaugh as both a libertarian and a lawyer?
Well, as I said, I think he's qualified to be on the Supreme Court. I think, and as you just said, there are good things about him from a libertarian perspective. There are some not so good things about him. With respect to just generally, I think of the short list, he probably was the most qualified.
Sorry, my mic was off.
Oh.
Go ahead, Harry.
No, so yeah, you're correct. From the short list, yeah, that should be the easiest one to get pushed through right before the midterms.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, he was going to get – Amy Coney Barrett, for instance, was somebody that I wanted to see picked because I thought that would be hilarious just to see how their reaction would work. But, you know, and she seemed like she was much more aggressive in setting new precedents. And I think as libertarians, we need to see a rollback of the federal government. But he's going to do that. So it was kind of like, OK, he seems good enough. So, I'm trying to get my mic fixed here because to me, it sounds like it's way off. So it probably doesn't sound any different to you guys, but it's driving me crazy. So he goes along. The hearings were the last 2 or 3 weeks, and nothing shocking. Seemed like it was going pretty well. The Democrats completely embarrassed themselves. We talked about that on an episode where you had Cory Booker, Spartacus, taking his last stand. You had the Senate Democrats on the Judiciary Committee just pulling these stunts, bringing in these protesters, going over the top, like, Linda Sarsour got kicked out of Congress, I think, the same day as Alex Jones, and mm-hmm. she behaved so much worse than Alex Jones. Linda Sarsour is a Me Too activist, and I think a Muslim activist, too. And so I said at the time, these big spectacles don't work. And what effect it has is that when something comes along that is an actual issue, the other side and independent-minded people are much less willing to give you the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah. Yeah.
And here we are. And I think because of the shenanigans that they pulled at the beginning of this on the hollow BS, you know, it's Handmaid Tale, he's going to just roll back all rights for women type stuff, it makes it so much more likely that we're going to see what we've seen from conservatives, which is just a complete anti-left knee-jerk reaction. I don't care what the facts are. We're not going to lose. And it probably wouldn't be as swift and as strong if they hadn't been so ridiculous 2 weeks ago.
Correct, yeah. Because it kind of like lumps it all in and lumps it all together. So the person who's like hearing all this in passing, oh, is this another one of those stunts?
Right.
I heard about this. I remember hearing about this. Yeah. Is it another one that they put up?
Did Dianne Feinstein just make up another story? You know?
Yeah.
Right. So, go ahead.
Well, yeah. Right before like a face was put with the articles, like that, you know, anyone I even like started to ask a poll about it, that's what they were thinking. It's like, well, they have to make this up. Something she probably made off of, you know, really quick and typed it up and sent it in.
Right. So Brett Kavanaugh gets picked by Donald Trump on July 9th of this year of 2018. And shortly after that, there is a letter written by this woman, Christine Blasey Ford, to her congressperson. So I'm actually just going to kind of take you through the Washington Post article. So this first kind of popped up mid last week. There was something Wednesday or Thursday that Senate Democrats were – the news got wind of – journalists got wind of Senator Dianne Feinstein having this thing that she wouldn't tell other Senate Democrats about that was supposedly pretty spicy. And – they started beating on her door saying, what is it, what is it, what is it? She was sitting on it. And so they eventually decided, they twisted her arm to release it. And at the time, I thought, okay, well, good on her for sitting on this, because it seems like it is, she either just doesn't have a lot of confidence in it, or she's protecting someone that doesn't want to be put out into the open. But I have a different view after kind of like a few days passing and some more clarity on it. What she did, I think, is release a statement to The Intercept, Glenn Greenwald's publication, basically saying on Friday, I have this information. The person doesn't want to come forward. I can't tell you what the allegation is. I've submitted it to the FBI, who then swiftly like said, we're not going to investigate this. And that's all I can say for now. What I think she was doing, which I think is fairly despicable, is she was putting public pressure on this woman to come out, because she knew that if she put that out there, people would start digging, mm-hmm. and they would find out who this woman was, and they did fairly quickly. Ronan Farrow had it, I think, Sunday?
Right.
Friday or Saturday, Ronan Farrow, who has not been wrong, which somebody on Twitter said he's the Omar of old white men, which I thought was hilarious if you've watched The Wire. Ronan coming. And so, you know, he's not been wrong, and so he put out kind of like, he didn't publish any names, but he said, here's what the accusation was about, it's of a sexual nature, and so then that got started even further. Mm-hmm. But I think it's pretty despicable of Dianne Feinstein to, if my guess, my educated guess of this is that she had this the entire time. She didn't tell any of her colleagues. She's had it since July.
Correct.
She didn't tell any of her colleagues. She didn't bring it up to him privately in her meetings, as far as we know. She didn't bring it up in front of the committee in public or closed-door hearings. She waited until the week before his confirmation hearing to bring this up in a way that outs a victim of sexual violence if this woman's story is true. That, to me, is just despicable beyond all get out. What do you guys think?
Huh. Never really thought about from that angle, that how, like, the, wow, sorry, that's kind of like going to shock because I didn't even picture it that way, that she just was holding it and using it just to force this woman out.
She smoked this woman out in an effort to sink Kavanaugh.
Yeah.
Which, you know, is a piece of information that I think, as a United States citizen, I want to know if this guy understands, like, personal boundaries, if he's a rapist or not. Well, and he should have the ability, like, I think we should know this information, right?
Yeah.
But at the same time, the way that this was all handled, I think, was so completely outrageous mm-hmm. on her part that it is really grotesque.
You're right, because it did drum up a lot of like looking and wanting to find this and want to discover, like, and have I think when she finally did come forward, she was talking about how like reporters were showing up at and trying to ask questions because right. like a lot of them thought like, okay, this has got, you know, from a record, from what we know, this has to be it.
Yeah, so she knew that she was going to get found out, and that's the reason she came forward,
right? So. Because, as we'll hear later in some of the articles, this woman was very hesitant to come forward. Not because she doesn't believe her story, but because of what's happening to her now, which is the absolute buzzsaw of public life. Brett Kavanaugh's going through it. She's going through it. Anybody who is in public life goes through it. You know, even the very, very small modicum of I'm not famous, people know who I am in small circles of the world. It brings more complication to your life.
Right. And that's why you give stuff to the FBI, not a senator.
So,
well, now, my understanding is that Feinstein gave it to the FBI early on. They redacted it, put it in the packet, but they didn't investigate it, probably because the person didn't want to be found out.
Yes.
She specifically requested to be confidential.
That was the other reason that she also called the Washington Post tip line. And they just were like, this is 36 years old. There's not a lot here. Like, you don't want to go forward. Like, you know, so they just kind of shelved it.
Well, there's nothing they can do.
Right.
Now, my understanding is she named three other people. One, Mark Judge.
Right.
Who was actually in the room.
Right.
Allegedly.
Allegedly.
And he denies this happening. But we also know that he used to get blackout drunk.
Yes.
The other two people, the press have been trying to contact, and they're not willing to say anything.
So let's
could the FBI have talked to these three people?
Right. So let's go through some of these stories, and let's kind of bring you some of the information as we know it. Just in I just want to read some of the stories that have gone on that I think are, like, here's my approach to it. Here's my approach to all of these things. I think that justice has to be done on all sides. I think that if someone comes forward and it looks credible, like the Roy Moore stuff, to me that was always very credible. With Roy Moore, you had several women who had contemporaries of the time that they had told their stories to. They had evidence. A lot of it was very credible. But then you have stuff like the George Takei thing, where it was a single guy. There weren't any other people coming forward. It didn't make a lot of sense. Like, you know, and so I take denials from the accused with a grain of salt, because I think your knee-jerk reaction, if you're in that position, is to immediately deny it and then bide some time to figure out what you're going to do. That's kind of the pattern. They say, I didn't do anything.
Yeah.
And then eventually they come and say they do the apology tour or whatever. There are very few of these guys who have kind of gone, yeah, I did it. Like Louis C.K., where he's writing an article. So my policy is I want to take seriously what the victim is saying and actually read what they have to say, kind of take in as much information. There's a few days where those initial accusations start to kind of build in the public. You know, if I think it's interesting, and I think it should be noted that there are no other people coming forward right now.
Yes, definitely.
I think, you know, with Cosby, by this time you had three or four other women that were kind of in the news. With Donald Trump, you had three or four other women that were coming out saying he said this or did this. Like, you have kind of a rolling news cycle that you've got to kind of just hang back and watch this stuff. And with this, there's been more information about her story. There haven't been other accusers, but I don't think that we want to say that just because there's one accuser that it's not true, right? I think you have to be sensible enough to think that a person can make a mistake once in their life, or this could all be completely BS. Like, we don't really know the truth yet. Like, I think when we watch the two of them testify before Congress on Monday,
mm-hmm.
if she testifies, then we'll know a little bit more. Like, it's just kind of like, don't make up your mind and try not to have, like, a decision yet until you just hang back and watch the news for a few days. But be open-minded enough to accept that she may be telling the truth, and be open-minded enough to think that he may be telling the truth. Because justice has to be done. If he committed a crime or he did something that was morally grotesque, then he should pay a price. If she is lying about him, then she should pay a price. Or
if it's something in between?
Or if it's something, I mean, there's a ton of gray area.
There is. Yeah. Okay, so he was drunk, according to her.
Right.
She said she had one beer.
Right.
I've had a lot of clients arrested for DUI who said they had one beer. In her mind, it could have gone down this way, but the way she's describing it now, the way she described it to her therapist in 2012, but if alcohol was involved, there's a possibility, and I'm not going to prejudge it and say this is what happened, but sure. This is something as a prosecutor we think about, as a defense attorney we think about, that the way, you know, when you're under the influence, you may be making poor decisions, you may be doing things you wouldn't normally do, and then when you sober up, you try to make sense out of it.
Right.
And so in her mind, and trying to make sense out of it, this could have happened. She fills in the gaps, she puts things in a perspective that makes sense to her and how she would normally behave.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not saying that that's what happened, but she passed a polygraph, and polygraphs aren't admissible in court. But there's some it all depends on how good your polygrapher is.
Right. I mean, and this guy was a former FBI agent. This was a former FBI polygrapher, mm-hmm. as you referred mm-hmm. to him. Now, I'm 35. Harry, you're early 30s?
33.
I don't know if you want to reveal your age. 40s, 50s?
47.
Okay, 47. So you're closer to the target age. I think she's 51. They're in their early 50s. I have a hard time remembering anything that happened at 15. I can remember being at a party at 16 that was like this. I remember two parties, and I can give you some details. I can kind of give you, but there wasn't any trauma that happened to me at those parties. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So I think when you're talking about accusations that are a year older than me, and you've got alcohol involved, and it's youth, and it's trauma, it's her memory is. It is something to be questioned. I think that's a fair thing that it is on the table on Monday when senators or whomever will handle this investigation. I think that's on the table. I think the only thing for me that is off the table is just outright saying she's lying. This is just all a political ploy, and like just automatically shutting your mind down and saying I'm not going to listen to this. Nah, nah, nah. Putting your fingers in your ears. Like, to me, that's intellectually dishonest, and I think that it is the same kind of things that conservatives complain about from liberals. It is that win at any cost, knee-jerk reaction, and I get it because conservatives, being a libertarian, trust me, I lose all the time. Like, I'm accustomed to losing, and conservatives lose and feel like they lose all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they feel like they're constantly getting a raw deal. And so they don't like to lose, and they don't like to just stand down and lose these fights. But sometimes I think you have to step back and go, what is the greater moral cost? Because with something like this, regardless of the accusations, regardless of whether this happened or not, the reaction from people does have an impact on society. And I think this is where conservatives who care about a moral society, so as we are told by them, completely miss the point of what they preach, and it's a little hypocritical, because when you say not all women are to be believed, or most women aren't to be believed, or any woman involving a man of power isn't to be believed, then that sends a very real message to two groups. Future victims who won't speak up when they have a traumatic situation, or previous victims, women, which there's no statistics to back this up. This is just anecdotal, but I would bet that 40 to 50% of women have had some form of sexual violence or trauma of this nature in their lifetime. You know, the numbers say 25%, but I think it's wildly underreported. And 100% of women have a daily occurrence where they feel unsafe because of a man.
Yes.
And so I think when conservatives have this knee-jerk reaction, you know, and don't want – they just put their fingers in their ears, that has a very real impact on their credibility with 50% of this country. And I think that has a real impact. And then also your reaction – I've seen people make the argument that he did do it. But he was 17, and it's just boys being boys, which is a really bad message to give to young men. Like, the reality is that young men, part of being a man in society is doing your best or trying to model good behavior and trying to be an example or a voice for men curbing their natural violent tendencies. It's the idea of a gentleman, a gentle man. And so when you just say, well, you know, boys will be boys and we all do things in our youth that are wild and crazy, and including raping people, I think that message...
I don't think anyone's saying that, though.
Nah, I have... You can go look at my Facebook posts, because there are people on my Facebook wall who are saying, he did do it and it doesn't matter. Mm. Flat out. Like, which boggles my mind, because it's such an indefensible, immoral position. But it does have a real impact in society. It doesn't matter what happened in this case. How you react to this stuff has an impact on future generations and the people around you and their view of you as a credible person when you're discussing other things. And it all starts with empathy. Do you see other people as human beings, or do you see political wins? What's your goal here? And so that's kind of where I'm coming from when I'm examining some of this stuff. So let's go to the Washington Post articles. This is when it really, like, started to gel together. So the Washington Post did an interview and a detailed story on Sunday, and I've got show notes galore. All the links, all the relevant articles from all the different sides on this will be in our show notes. 20, 30 articles that you can kind of go and look that I've read through to try and get a bunch of different perspectives, and I'm bringing you the better ones. So this is the story according to the Washington Post. Earlier this summer, Christine Blasey Ford wrote a confidential letter to a senior Democratic lawmaker alleging that Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh sexually assaulted her more than three decades ago when they were high school students in suburban Maryland. Since Wednesday, she has watched as that bare-bones version of her story became public without her name or consent, drawing a blanket denial from Kavanaugh, and roiling a nomination that just days ago seemed all but certain to succeed. Now Ford has decided that if her story is going to be told, she wants to be the one to tell it. Speaking publicly for the first time, Ford said that one summer in the early 80s, Kavanaugh and a friend, both stumbling drunk, Ford alleges, corralled her into a bedroom during a gathering of teenagers at a house in Montgomery County. While his friend watched, who we now know as Mark Judge, who is a conservative writer, documentarian, and wrote a book basically about being a teenage alcoholic, corralled her into a bedroom during a gathering of teenagers at a house in Montgomery County. Now, what is not in this story, which I think is something that rightly opponents have seized on, is doesn't give you a specific date, doesn't tell you where the house was, and she doesn't remember specifically, which is not a crazy detail to forget after 36 years.
Yeah, it's not unusual when you're talking about something that long ago.
Right. But it is something I want to note. While his friend watched, she said Kavanaugh pinned her to a bed on her back and groped her over her clothes, grinding his body against hers and clumsily attempting to pull off her one-piece bathing suit and the clothing she wore over it. When she tried to scream, she said he put his hand over her mouth. She said, "I thought he might inadvertently kill me," said Ford, now a 51-year-old research psychologist in Northern California. "He was trying to attack me and remove my clothing." I don't know if it's in the story, but she was 15 and they were 17. Ford said she was able to escape when Kavanaugh's friend and classmate at Georgetown Prep School, Mark Judge, jumped on top of them, sending all three tumbling. She said she ran from the room, briefly locked herself in a bathroom, and then fled the house. Ford said she told no one of the incident in any detail until 2012, when she was in couples therapy with her husband. The therapist notes, portions of which were provided by Ford and reviewed by the Washington Post, do not mention Kavanaugh's name, but say she reported that she was attacked by students from a, quote, elitist boys' school who went on to become, quote, highly respected and high-ranking members of society in Washington. The notes say four boys were involved, a discrepancy Ford says was an error on the therapist's part. Ford said there were four boys at the party, but only two in the room. Now, this is something that critics have attacked, and it is not uncommon in issues like this, especially involving criminality, for a therapist to not take down specific names. Some will, most won't, and that's just an ethical thing because they don't want that record in there, especially when statute of limitations are up.
The other thing is that she also went to an elitist school, all-girls prep school.
Yeah, so they were at
saying the word elitist for it is just kind of like fluff. That also leads to the – I also see where people have that knee-jerk for it because it almost forces and paints a narrative of this elitist boys' school preying on this poor public school girl.
Yeah, when in reality – and I've put this article in the show notes. Politico wrote an article from the elite Washington circles because both of their families – are from elite Washington families. That's why they're going to elite private schools in Washington, D.C.
Yep.
And they have known both of these people for their entire life, many of the power players in Washington, D.C. So this is uncomfortable for the swamp because these are two people that they've known their entire lives.
Right.
That have been part of their community.
Correct. I don't like the way the article painted that way. It just seems like this elitist boys was put in there. But it also leaves credence on why this was kept met. You have to be quiet because right. You're right. It's the swamp on swamp.
Right.
Yeah.
This is we'll get to why she didn't talk about it until 2012, but I've got thoughts on that. Notes from an individual therapy session the following year when she was being treated for what she says have been long-term effects of the incident show Ford described a rape attempt in her late teens. In an interview, her husband Russell Ford said that in the 2012 sessions, she recounted being trapped in a room with two drunken boys, one of whom pinned her to a bed, molested her, and prevented her from screaming. He said that he recalled that his wife used Kavanaugh's last name and voiced concern that Kavanaugh, then a federal judge, might one day be nominated to the Supreme Court. Now, that's her husband. So, obviously, you know, if you're prone to be critical of her, then that's probably not the best character witness. But I do find this to be a piece of credible evidence. Therapist notes, having spent 3 years in therapy, I'm familiar with the concept, and they're not always accurate, but they're something that are a consistent, credible record from a person that you're telling your entire life story to. You know, I sat down in a therapist's office, and she goes, let's start with all your childhood traumas and work our way forward. And things came out in that process that I did not realize they were bothering me. Things like my parents' divorce. I had no idea that that was something that was hanging me up. But through the process of talking through these various traumas, things come out as you're going through therapy that you didn't realize existed. And you really can't – you're not going to take my word for it until you go do it, and everybody should do some therapy. It's it's great. But that's definitely – this to me seems like a credible piece of evidence. Here is her therapist and another witness and her husband saying this is something she talked about long before this guy was ever nominated to the Supreme Court. It didn't just come up in the last week. She didn't just start making up the story. This is something that she has told repeatedly over the last few years to several different people, and the therapy seems to be the catalyst for when she opened up about it, which is not uncommon in any way, shape, or form. People don't talk about traumatic situations until they're in a safe place to talk about their story. Mm-hmm. And then when you talk about your story and you realize nobody really thinks less of you for it, you tell your story more to more people until you can tell your story and it doesn't affect you in any way, shape, or form. So to me, this is a very credible piece of evidence that she is presenting here of her story. On Sunday, the White House sent the Post a statement Kavanaugh issued last week when the outlines of Ford account became public. I categorically and unequivocally deny this allegation. I did not do this back in high school or at any time. Through a White House spokesperson, Kavanaugh declined to comment further. The White House had no further comment. Trump didn't even really make comment until today. He's been oddly silent about it. The judge, his friend, judge declined to comment. In an interview Friday with the Weekly Standard, before Ford's name was known, he denied that any such incident occurred. "It's just absolutely nuts," he said. "I never saw Brett act this way." He told the New York Times that Kavanaugh was a brilliant student who loved sports and was not into anything crazy or illegal. Christine Ford is a professor at Palo Alto University who teaches in a consortium with Stanford University training graduate students in clinical psychology. Her work has been widely published in academic journals. Now, she contacted the Post through a tip line in early July. Now, we told you it was July 9th, July 7th when he was nominated to the Supreme Court. So in early July, when it had become clear that Kavanaugh was on the short list of possible names to replace Kennedy, but before Trump announced his name publicly. So, you know, before the first week of July was over, she had contacted the Washington Post tip line. "A registered Democrat who has made small contributions to political organizations, she contacted her Congresswoman, Democrat Anna E. G. Eshoo, around the same time. In late July, she sent a letter via Eshoo's office to Dianne Feinstein of California, the ranking Democrat on the Judiciary Committee. The letter, which was read to the Post, which I put in the show notes, you can read the letter for yourself. It is posted by CNN and ended up getting leaked, presumably from Feinstein's office. She signed the letter Christine Blasey, the name she uses professionally. Though Ford had contacted the Post, she declined to speak on the record for weeks as she grappled with concerns about what going public would mean for her and her family, and what she said was her duty as a citizen to tell the story. She's hired Deborah Katz, a Washington lawyer, for her work on sexual harassment cases. Under the advice of Katz, who believed Ford would be attacked as a liar if she came forward, Ford took a polygraph test administered by a former FBI agent in early August. The results, which Katz provided to the Post, concluded that Ford was being truthful when she said in a statement summarizing her allegations as accurate. By late August, Ford had decided not to come forward, calculating that doing so would upend her life and probably would not affect Kavanaugh's confirmation. Why suffer through the annihilation if it's not going to matter anyways? So let's talk about the polygraph stuff. I mean, you probably know a little bit more about polygraphs than I do, but you know they're not admissible in court because they can be beaten. But I've never heard them to be wildly inaccurate. I mean, why are they not admissible in court, Greg?
The science behind it is not
science.
It's not reliable enough for it to be considered in court. There's a lot of subjectivity. This is why the person administering the polygraph test and their qualifications are very important. And I don't know. He's former FBI, but who knows? I don't know what his track record is, and or her. And like I said, or as George Costanza said, if you believe it to be true, it's not going to detect a lie. But just to give you a little overview of how my understanding of how the polygraph happens.
Why are you laughing? What's so funny?
George Costanza thing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So first they do a pre-interview. So essentially the person doing the exam, I call him a polygrapher, I think it is, interviews the person, gets details from them so that they can then formulate four questions. And the four questions has to have the same answer in it. So it's either four questions that based on the pre-interview should all be yes, or four questions that based on the pre-interview should all be no. Mm-hmm. So she's not like telling the story as she's hooked up. She's right. Just responding to very specific, single detailed questions. And I'm not sure why four is the standard. I've actually seen some come back with just two questions, and I'm wondering how is this possible, but that's what that polygrapher decided to do. That process, and you're hooked up to a bunch of machines. It's measuring your body's reactions to known yes, no questions. The response should be, and then they do the actual questions that they're trying to monitor. And so it's either no deception detected, inconclusive, or deception detected.
Gotcha. Okay. Thank you. It's very nice having an attorney here. You know, that's why I had Abdul on when Kavanaugh was first nominated. I'm going to need an attorney to walk through this. So it's very helpful. Thank you for being here.
I don't like the polygraph stuff. It always seems like quackery because it's like I trust tea leaves over a polygraph machine.
I sweat already. Like, yeah. I'm sweating. It's 64 degrees in here, and I'm sweating. Like, yeah. It's, you know, it's just how it is.
And like for the now for the people who are like for the naysayers, they're probably thinking this. It's like you're trying to tell me someone who's, you know, a professor of clinical psychology teaches people can't pass a polygraph test. Who probably has access to all kinds of tests, do drugs, do be able to get through this test.
Right.
So, yeah, that's probably what they're it goes through my head when they're especially talking about this polygraph test.
Right.
I know, like, in certain conventions, even people set up a polygraph machine just to see if they can beat it.
The other thing you should know is that you only know about the polygraph test when the person actually passed it.
Okay.
Because, you know, like, I've had it done on some clients. I've never had a client that came out with deception and then, okay, you know, let's just hide this. But you actually can. You have no obligation to turn that over.
Let's say I come to you and I'm accused of murder. Do you polygraph me before I take a... What's the point of the polygraph?
Oh, well, the point of the polygraph is usually when we have a... he said, she said type situation, and we want to show the prosecutor that this person is, you know, our client is the one you should be believing. No prosecutor will polygraph a sex assault victim, for instance.
Right.
So you polygraph your client in order to turn it over to the prosecutors. Now, in my county, the prosecutors don't care.
Okay.
And they still go to trial. Once they've charged the case, once they've met the alleged victim, they're going to go forward.
So in some prosecutors may see the results and maybe be more lenient or not even pursue the case at all.
Yeah. So if they have – basically what we want to show them is, look, our client passed the polygraph. If you have any doubts about the complaining witness or alleged victim, then here's your chance to, you know, dump the case.
Right. Gotcha.
And like I said, so far that hasn't been effective where I practice, except for like maybe one case. But it's always you always need something else that throws some doubt on the case. They're not going to just make a decision. Off
I think through all of this, like what we're trying to do here is trying to, as responsible citizens and trying to be fair to both sides, we're trying to find data points. You know, with the Takei thing, for instance, that's the one that just stood out. The second we read it on the show, I was just like, this is bull. You know, you go back and listen to the Roy Moore episodes where Harry and I are talking about Roy Moore, and we talk about some of the other cases, and you're just like, okay, this one just doesn't make any sense. Like, this seems like bull, because there's no real data points here. But with, like, Roy Moore, there were data points. With, you know, Louis C.K., there were real data points, especially him confessing, you know, like... With this, there aren't a ton of data points, but there's enough for you to go, okay, maybe we should just kind of figure out what this is. Because I think from regardless of what team you're on, because that's really what this has become, it's really like I need to defend my team no matter what the morality of this situation is. Like, because this is not – we'll talk about Anita Hill, but like this is not pubes on a Coke can. Like this is attempted rape. Like, there's a big difference between the two in my mind. You know, saying making someone feel slightly uncomfortable with words versus attacking someone. Like, even if it was that long ago, like, I think we need to know if she's telling the truth. What we need some more data points on that. And then secondly, what's his version of it? How does he handle it? How does he refute it? And then we need data points from his side. And then we kind of all make up our decision. And I think if you're a conservative and you're backing Kavanaugh to the hilt, I think you kind of want that process because you want that discovery process to kind of play out. Because if you just rush him through knee-jerk reaction, like that discovery process, that conversation around this never got concluded.
Yes.
You know, and you've seen even with Justice Thomas, there's always kind of been that taint around him because of the Anita Hill stuff. You really, like, if you want people like me who are sympathetic to Justice Kavanaugh to not just think he's an illegitimate justice on the court because he didn't ever have to answer for any of this, then you really want to go through that process. And if he did do it, then you have four people that we talked about that would be fantastic justices that would probably be even better than Kavanaugh. You know, so I think I just sometimes look at this and I go, why are I look at the people arguing on Facebook or I look at pundits who are tweeting and I just go, what is your thinking process here? Like, do you just not like, do you just want to get him confirmed? Do you not care about her story at all? Do you care, but you just want to make sure that this Congress, as opposed to the one that you might lose in November, like, I guess I just don't understand a lot of the thinking process.
I think that is their thinking process. We're in September.
Right.
There's an election in November. I believe that the conservatives feel that if this gets delayed, if he withdraws his nomination, if the Senate does not confirm him, and you come up with another nominee, that the Democrats in the Senate will definitely put off scheduling hearings until after the election.
True.
And then they're going to use the if they win, they're going to use the justification that was used in with Obama's nominee that never got a hearing,
right?
To not honor any of Trump's replacement nominee.
Yeah, we're 49 days out from the election, and typically, someone crunched some numbers. I think at 538, maybe, or Washington Post, and said 65 days is your average confirmation process. Realistically, they've got about 20 days left in Congress, if that, before they go for their breaks to campaign. And so they want to get this confirmed, so they have the majority on the court, you know, blazy be damned, when they could honestly turn it into a great campaign issue, which is panic, 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 because part of what's happening out there is that Donald Trump stupidly, I'll go to you in just a second, Harry. I just want to finish this thought. Donald Trump is stupidly, because of his ego and pride, has said, there's no red wave, there's no blue wave, there's no blue wave, there's a red wave, there's a red wave. And so Republicans believe him. And so they're not as enthusiastic and they're more lethargic. And so they're not going to go out and vote. And so that could completely change things more than anything else. And so if you're Republicans, why wouldn't you want to go, they just sunk our nominee, now we've got to get another one through, and if you don't show up for your Senate candidates, if you don't get Mike Braun over Joe Donnelly or Joe Manchin loses, like, that to me would be such a better motivator than, like, rushing this guy through, having someone that is forever tainted on the court. You know, and he may still be, but there's a possibility that this woman sits down in front of Congress, you know, and there was a notification as to her saying she's not going to testify before Congress until the FBI does an investigation. And I think there's a very real, like, argument to be had, like, okay, well, if you're not going to come testify, then let's just pass him through. Like, you don't believe your own story or whatever. So go ahead, Harry.
Yeah, you're absolutely – that's what I was trying to go with this, is that if you're on Team Red, you want you want to draw this out. You almost – the – it's not that Feinstein handed them a grenade, handed you a brilliant present. You want to be able to sit there and, like, and showcase, like, look, we're going to give her a voice. We're going to give her a time. We're going to find out 100% whether this goes or not. Because if you rush this through, that's exactly what the Democrats want. They want you to rush it through because they're going to just churn out that war on women stuff. And they're going to use that to pound you into the ground in November and going off into the presidential election.
Right.
But if you take the time, even if he doesn't get in, you know, you've now got that scare, that fear that will get people out, that will get people to vote, and they can't use that war on women argument because you sat down and gave this person the ability to come out, speak, and the time to. Even if she doesn't, they should at least, like, you know what, we're going to sit here and look at an empty chair for 30 minutes.
Look, the Democrats are going to do what they're going to do, like, yeah, regardless. Like, they're going to come out and vote. They're going to make those same arguments. It doesn't matter what the Republicans do. They're just going to manufacture whatever they want.
Correct. Yeah, that's true, too. But the thing is, like, they have to give the time, you know. You have to sit there and give the time. Because if you don't, you know, and it's now... And the other good president, the present thing, the present part of it is that if you can keep Trump to shut up about it, right? Don't tweet about it. This is going to control the entire cycle. So now you can get things and do other things and campaign and keep everything else done quietly and get things moved on. And that's kind of what you want with the going this close in the election. You want to get the eyes off you and look at this other just one issue. And you get these on one issue people up and moving and try to screw these independents.
Sorry, I'm choking over here. I'm looking at Craig going, your turn. And he's like, what?
I think you guys are both right. It's something that, first of all, I think that there still needs to be more investigation. You're not going to just throw her up there, ask her a bunch of questions. Okay, tell your story and ask her a bunch of questions and then throw him up there so that he can deny it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that doesn't help either of them, I don't think. Like I said earlier, she mentioned two other people that she could name that was at that party. How about we talk to them, mm-hmm. see if they remember anything? I mean, she did say she kind of snuck out, but she also said she heard voices of the Judge Kavanaugh and Mark Judge speak after they stumbled down the stairs speaking to some of the other guests. So what did they say? How were they like? Were they stumbling drunk? You know, that type of thing.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot more in the story. I won't belabor the point. It's more about Mark Judge and like what a questionable character he is. This just in from the New York Times. Christine Blasey Ford wants FBI to investigate Kavanaugh before she testifies. And I apologize.
Yep.
This is from Peter Baker and their investigative team. The woman who has accused President Trump's Supreme Court nominee of sexual assault threw into doubt plans for an extraordinary Senate hearing to air her accusations, charging on Tuesday that some senators have already made up their minds and insisting that the FBI investigate first. To be honest, I don't agree with that because I've seen, you know, Grassley, I've seen Murkowski, I've seen a lot of the Republicans on the committee say, yeah, we want to hear what she has to say. I mean, maybe they've made up their minds, and it's political. But if there is no doubt that if this were Sotomayor and there were a man or woman accusing Sotomayor of the same thing and Democrats had like it would if you just flip the titles, it would all be the same behavior.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's what makes me crazy about it. It's like I look at my good friend Rob Kendall. And it's just like, dude, if this were a Democrat nominee, you'd be, we need to know everything right now. Like, it's just lacks intellectual honesty.
Yeah. But I'm with you, like, with the, with some people's, like, the FBI going through it, my main problem is because for some reason the FBI has always been known to, once they start investigating one thing, they just start finding other stuff.
Yeah.
For no other apparent reason.
Yeah, like the special counsel. Blasey Ford did not explicitly rule out appearing next Monday before the Senate committee to testify along with Kavanaugh, but echoing Senate Democrats, she said an investigation should be the first step before she is put on national television, quote, on national television to relieve this traumatic and harrowing incident. Go ahead.
But the thing is with that, the FBI will have to put that, if they pick that interview up, they pick that up, investigation up, the investigation take time, they have to gather information, that takes time, they have to hunt people down, that also takes time. So the clock is just ticking.
Republicans are unlikely to negotiate an alternative date and could go ahead with the hearing with or without her and cancel it altogether if Blasey refuses to appear. They have also rejected the possibility of an FBI investigation. Lindsey Graham said, if she does not come on Monday, we are going to move on and vote on Wednesday, which they may hold a vote. That's a good position for Lindsey Graham in the bargaining of it, but there's no way you're going to get 51 Republican senators to vote for this guy if that's the case.
Right.
I don't think there is any reality where you get Jeff Flake or Susan Collins or Lisa Murkowski to vote for Brett Kavanaugh on Wednesday if there isn't a full vetting of this situation.
Correct.
And so no matter what you or I think out there, be it blue team, red team, yellow team, green team.
Purple team.
Or whatever.
Purple shadow.
Then it really matters what these individual senators think. And a Jeff Flake and a Bob Corker are looking for a way to stick it to Donald Trump and have been for a long time. And this is just another way. I mean, Jeff Flake's already saying he's going to do it. Now, a lot of this comes from the Anita Hill experiences. So I, to be quite honest, did not know a ton about Anita Hill. I remember being a kid, and I remember it happening. It was 1991 in October. very much a similar situation. And I have to say, I've seen this. Do you remember Clarence Thomas? Okay, well, this is a different man. This is a different woman. This is a different time. This is a different situation. Mm-hmm. These are different accusations. Stop the collectivist thinking and open up your mind and go, you know what? Maybe not every situation is exactly the same. And I think what it is people want very quick answers to complex problems. They don't want to sit down and read 30 articles about this stuff and try and come to some conclusion. They want a split-second judgment on what they ought to think. And so their mind just reverts to what they already know about, which is Clarence Thomas. Well, they're just trying to screw Clarence Thomas like they did with Anita Hill. And Anita Hill lied. Do you know where the eroding of Anita Hill's credibility comes from? Do you know the journalist that wrote the book called The Real Anita Hill that entered into the populace all of these little threads of why Anita Hill lied about Clarence Thomas? Do you know who that author was, Harry?
No, I do not.
A man named David Brock, who was then a right-wing journalist. Do you know what David Brock does now?
No.
He was the founder of Media Matters.
No.
And so, if you want to question Anita Hill's credibility without looking into the sources of your information, you're relying on the credibility of David Brock. Now listen, I don't know anything about Anita Hill's credibility, but I sure shit know a lot about the credibility of David Brock and Media Matters. So let's be careful before we, Ben Shapiro, start just parroting all of these things without citing our facts, because our facts may be coming from the guy that founded Media Matters, that was instrumental in the Steele dossier and basically every torment of the Republicans for the last 10 years.
Yeah.
Along with George Soros. So, but Anita Hill, I didn't know a lot about, so I've been kind of studying her a little bit. We're going to play her opening testimony, and we're going to play Clarence Thomas, because you're going to hear a lot about it, so I want you to understand it. And Clarence Thomas, like, dropped the mic. Like, oh, Craig watched me watch it for the first time. I was like, holy crap. So I'm going to go to Anita Hill. Anita Hill wrote today a New York Times op-ed, and I'm not going to read the whole thing to you. She talks about a lot of stuff. This is not an unintelligent woman. This is a person who worked with Justice Thomas in two different locations, and the things ironically happened at the EEOC, the Employment Equal Opportunity Employment Office, where the initial accusations took place. And she's now at Brandeis University. She's a professor. But she basically outlined some ground rules. She's been very critical of her situation, and many people are very critical of Joe Biden, who was head of the committee, and the Democrats that were on the committee, and how that was all handled. And basically, here's this woman who just like said, I've got these allegations. I want to read these allegations. And then they opened it up to public comment from the senators, and they just like tore her to shreds. It ended up almost costing Arlen Specter his race. It cost a Democrat senator his race. I think it cost a Republican senator his race. There's a great article that I did not print out, but it's basically something in the title along the, I think it's in the Washington Post, about the echoes of Clarence Thomas ring through the Kavanaugh hearing. It's a great article. If you don't know anything about the Anita Hill stuff, this article really kind of lays out, like, here's what happened during and after the Anita Hill stuff. And so if these current senators don't handle a lot of this, like Dianne Feinstein's up in November, I think. I think she's one of the senators that's up for election on November, whatever. And if they don't handle this stuff very quickly, then it and in a way that has some sort of class, it could be a real problem for them.
Yeah. I'm just going to say, chat says your mic's cutting out. You might want to swap it.
Yeah, I don't know what's up with my mic. So, well,
didn't want to throw you off. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's
okay.
Trying
to do hand
signals. Why don't you? What memory of Anita Hill do you have?
Well, I was in college at the time, and I remember it coming up. It came up late in the confirmation process. I believe the she was also reluctant to come forward.
And a journalist leaked it, and then it was like a week before, too. It was almost the same timing.
Yes. And she was up there. Yeah, they clumsily asked her questions. I think we as a society knew a lot less about these type of allegations and why people don't come forward all the time than we do now. But he was adamant in his denial. I do remember that. And you watched it while we were waiting to start the show. And that I didn't even remember it being that forceful. But I do remember the high-tech lynching line and the categorical denial.
Let's actually play that. Go ahead, Harry.
No, I'm just like, yeah, because when you go back and like listen to the Anita Hill, you can see like how someone in the 90s probably would have like didn't really see too much truth in that. But I think with this year, with all the Me Too stuff going on, it's like, okay, wait a minute.
It is. And when you listen to this, when you hear this, you go, wow, there is a lot of, like, when you listen to her statement, you go, okay, yeah, this is pretty much like every one of these others that we've heard about.
Yeah, this, yeah, through the whole thing, too. It's like, oh, whoa, yeah, now it's,
Yeah, so let's actually take, let's go to back to October, it's October of, I think it was October 9th or something, in 1991. This is Anita Hill in her opening statement.
During this period at the Department of Education, my working relationship with Judge Thomas was positive. I had a good deal of responsibility and independence. I thought he respected my work and that he trusted my judgment. After approximately 3 months of working there, he asked me to go out socially with him. What happened next and telling the world about it are the two most difficult things, experiences of my life. It is only after a great deal of agonizing consideration and great number of sleepless nights that I am able to talk of these unpleasant matters to anyone but my close friends. I declined the invitation to go out socially with him and explained to him that I thought it would jeopardize at the time I considered to be a very good working relationship. I had a normal social life with other men outside of the office. I believed then, as now, that having a social relationship with a person who was supervising my work would be ill-advised. I was very uncomfortable with the idea and told him so. I thought that by saying no and explaining my reasons, my employer would abandon his social suggestions. However, to my regret, in the following few weeks, he continued to ask me out on several occasions. He pressed me to justify my reasons for saying no to him. These incidents took place in his office or mine. They were in the form of private conversations, which would not have been overheard by anyone else. My working relationship became even more strained when Judge Thomas began to use work situations to discuss sex. On these occasions, he would call me into his office for reports on education issues and projects, or he might suggest that because of the time pressures of his schedule, we go to lunch to a government cafeteria. After a brief discussion of work, he would turn the conversation to a discussion of sexual matters. His conversations were very vivid. He spoke about acts that he had seen in pornographic films involving such matters as women having sex with animals and films showing group sex or rape scenes. He talked about pornographic materials depicting individuals with large penises or large breasts involved in various sex acts. On several occasions, Thomas told me graphically of his own sexual prowess. Because I was extremely uncomfortable talking about sex with him at all, and particularly in such a graphic way, I told him that I did not want to talk about these subjects.
Heads up, sci-fi fanatics, and welcome to Sci-Fi Test Lab.
Oh, that sounds fun. But that's a weird thing to go. He talked about his enormous junk. Hey, what's up, science kids? Okay. Now for his part, let's go to the Clarence. So right after Anita, I think actually, no, Clarence Thomas went after Anita Hill.
Correct.
And so she came and testified, and then right after, they let everyone out of the courtroom, and then in came Clarence Thomas, and this was his opening statement.
Committee will please come to order. Judge, it's a tough day and tough night for you, I know. Let me ask, do you have anything you'd like to say before we begin? I understand that your preference is, which is totally and completely understandable, that we go 1 hour tonight, 30 minutes on each side. Am I correct in that?
That's right.
Do you have anything you'd like to say?
Senator, I would like to start by saying unequivocally, uncategorically, that I deny each and every single allegation against me today that suggested in any way that I had conversations of a sexual nature or about pornographic material with Anita Hill, that I ever attempted to date her, that I ever had any personal sexual interest in her, or that I in any way ever harassed her. A second, and I think more important point, I think that this today is a travesty. I think that it is disgusting. I think that this hearing should never occur in America. This is a case in which this sleaze, this dirt, was searched for by staffers of members of this committee, was then leaked to the media, and this committee and this body validated it and displayed it at prime time over our entire nation. How would any member on this committee, any person in this room, or any person in this country would like sleaze said about him or her in this fashion? Or this dirt dredged up in this gossip and these lies displayed in this manner? How would any person like it? The Supreme Court is not worth it. No job is worth it. I'm not here for that. I'm here for my name, my family, my life, and my integrity. I think something is dreadfully wrong with this country when any person in this free country would be subjected to this. This is not a closed room. There was an FBI investigation. This is not an opportunity to talk about difficult matters privately or in a closed environment. This is a circus. It's a national disgrace. And from my standpoint, as a black American, as far as I'm concerned, it is a high-tech lynching for uppity blacks who in any way deign to think for themselves, to do for themselves, to have different ideas. And it is a message that unless you kowtow to an old order, this is what will happen to you. You will be lynched, destroyed, caricatured by a committee of the U.S. Senate rather than hung from a tree.
And then he dropped the mic. What do you guys think about that? Harry, I mean, you said you never heard about it. What did you think about those two clips?
Well, I remember hearing Anita Hill's like statements about it and hearing stuff like that. And it was, I remember hearing it, I thought it was very like, because when I heard it was very young and wasn't really in a working environment and well before the Me Too stuff. So it was always like, okay, that's weird.
can't believe that would, you know, working professionals shouldn't do this, and they wouldn't do this. This doesn't happen, you know? It sounds right. like something out of a bad TV, like a bad 90s, you know, PSA TV show. Fast forward to 2017, 2018, during the Me Too stuff, I was like, okay, now I question more of this. You know, it makes right. you, because there's so much of the light shows, like, okay, so there was some of this stuff happening. It's just, you know, wasn't really brought up to light in enough volume to really show people.
Yeah.
And hearing Clarence Dawson, because like I've heard him say that before, and that resonated, it still resonates with me, but the idea that, but it makes me, how can I put it, like, I kind of want more of, like, you know, is there more Anita Hills out there? Because, you know, she probably wasn't the only one.
Sure. Yeah, and to his credit, there's never been another accusation about him as he's worked on the Supreme Court that I'm aware of. So, you know, and at the time the discussion was if he made a woman feel uncomfortable in the workplace and put a pubic hair on a Coke can, does that mean that he isn't able to be an effective Supreme Court justice? You know, now things are more disqualifying than they were back then. And obviously, Clarence Thomas, from our perspective, has been a very effective Supreme Court justice. You know, he's been a very good Supreme Court justice. And so it begs the question of Kavanaugh. If he did do this stuff when he was 17 years old and he was blackout drunk and tried to rape a girl and it was attempted rape and that was the only instance, does that mean that he cannot be a Supreme Court justice? Very uncomfortable to say yes, he can be a Supreme Court justice, probably more so than it was back in 1991, but that's one of the questions that I think senators are going to have to face, and then I think conservatives first, and then the rest of us are going to have to face, like, does this disqualify him from being a United States senator? So I'll let you guys answer that first before I give my perspective.
It's real hard to say that he should be a Supreme Court justice if he had done it the way that she described it. But playing devil's advocate, if it was a one-time thing because he was drunk, then that's a problem, but it doesn't make him a sexual predator.
Right.
Because there's been no other allegations. There's that, I don't know how many women who said they've known him for 35 years, and that's not the way he acted around women. And the 35 years is significant because it goes back to the time of the alleged incident.
Right.
So, but if it happened the way she described it, then it's still very hard to say, oh, yeah, let's put this guy on the Supreme Court.
Right.
Even if it's a one-time thing and because he was drunk.
Yeah.
As you said earlier, like knowing boundaries and so forth. But the fact that there are no other allegations out there.
He's hired more women. He's hired more women for his spot in the D.C. court than other justices on the district court and the D.C. court. You know, he's Mona Charon on the only reasonable discussion other than this in anywhere in the media was on point on NPR. And I'm going to put the embed code in the show notes so you can listen to that discussion because it was a Washington Post Me Too reporter and Mona Charon, who is a conservative who writes for National Review and the NPR host. And it wasn't a debate. It was a discussion. And it was an hour or 40 minutes of like really thoughtful back and forth about a lot of things. And Mona Charon said, you know, does the one bad thing that he did at 17 outweigh the working with legal defense for underprivileged kids or legal funds for young lawyers who are underprivileged or hiring more women for the does this one thing and the trauma that he perpetrated on this woman outweigh, if he did it, the way that she said it, does that outweigh the good that he went on to do after that? Was there, you know, did he wake up the next morning and say, I've got to get myself together and then live an exemplary life? At what point, you know, but if he's never going to be honest about it, if he's never going to tell us the truth or talk about that pivot point, then how do we can't know that. So The Trump playbook is to deny, deny, deny. I mean, those are the guys that get away with it. And that's what Norm MacDonald strangely got in trouble for saying that we should have empathy for Roseanne and Louis C.K. and the people that do this stuff, because there's real cost to them. Mm-hmm. You know, they made mistakes, but there's a real emotional cost to them. And he, you know, got canceled off of Fallon. And, you know, and his point was, with the ever-increasing scale of ridiculousness, if you don't allow the people like Louis C.K. the chance to come back from that stuff, or if you don't allow Roseanne to apologize and then accept that apology or her explanation, then what you end up with is the Roy Moore model being the way that it works, is that it's the, I'm just going to go over the top, I'm going to just be awful about it. Like, and that is what you end up with if you don't have empathy for the people who do ugly things.
Correct. Yeah, because you got Roseanne and Louis C.K. who just said, no, I did this. This is what I did.
Right.
Right? These are the people that should be like, you know, give them a road back. Because they did these, you didn't have to take them to court. They didn't have to do this. They said, no, I did this. They didn't try to do any obfuscation, like, oh, yeah, by the way, I'm gay. You know, Louis C.K. didn't, you know, instantly just come out and gay.
No, he said, I'm a dirtbag. I'm a pervert.
Yeah.
My bad. I'm going to go just be quiet for a while.
Yeah. You know, but with the whole thing, right, does this disqualify him? Well, is the Supreme Court the moral arbiters of the morality of the United States, of every American? Do we look for them for our moral good, or just to be able to judge a document in whether a law is or go for it or not?
Right.
That's what they do, right?
Yes. Does that ever disqualify? Well, so if you are a libertarian you are a conservative,
straight INTJ,
if you are just looking at it from the proper view,
uh-huh,
then the Supreme Court, and correct me if I'm wrong, Lawyer Craig, the Supreme Court is just there to take a specific case with a specific set of examples and say this is constitutional or not. But the left and the progressives on both sides of the aisle have turned the Supreme Court into the ultimate arbiter of what is appropriate or not. We played that Ben Sasse clip a couple weeks ago where he talked about, here's why the Supreme Court, it matters too much. And it's because Congress has abdicated its duties to the executive branch, which is abdicating its duties to bureaucrats and the Supreme Court. And it matters too much, and it's become an activist position, and it needs to get back to that administrative, functional, as opposed to moral position that we've granted it. So,
yes.
If you're on the left, then you don't want an immoral person sitting on there. If you're on the conservative side, and that's probably why so many of them don't care as much about this, it is just a matter of, can the guy shoot down legislation that's unconstitutional according to his views?
Has he committed a crime? There's like, so, but yeah, it basically, so that's all you're looking for. This all is just a big dog and pony show, because he's not sitting in jail.
Right.
For a crime.
And could he?
Yeah, or could he right now? So, yeah, there's nothing really they can bring up to find out. Like, no, he's unfit. Now, on the emotional, like, will you try to put some effort that you try to look fair? I'm not saying that boys will be boys. I'm saying that you've got it two drunk 17-year-old kids and from an old boys' school trying to, I don't know, be drunk and try to talk with, like, have to interact with the other sex.
It's 1982.
Yeah, it's what is it? Animal House. What happened at what, the year before or the year after?
I think that was 79. So, 80,
yeah,
maybe?
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. So they grew up and they're 14, being impressed by Animal House, and they're just trying to talk and trying to sit there. I'm not saying like Animal House influenced them. I was like, let's try to look through this type of lens. And the other thing is, what Craig is just trying to piece it together, because this, to me, I'm trying to visualize this in my head on the axis, like on top of me, I'm in a bathing suit, grinding on top of me, trying to take off, like, so she had a cover up on and a one piece. That's where I get hung up on it. Now, granted, that could just be her just piecing details back to it, because that's where my brain gets caught up on it when we usually start getting to the weeds of the details of that.
Right.
But at the same time, it is kids doesn't have that much interaction with each other's genders threw into an interaction with alcohol in it.
Yeah, so where I come down on it is that rape, maybe more than murder in my mind, I mean, sexual violence and domestic violence to me are like my hot button issues to begin with. And sexual violence, I've just seen in a person that has deep conversations with a lot of friends, especially female friends, and has seen the effect that it's had on children that are in my life, like on family members and how they've struggled their entire lives. I mean, baby boomer adults to peers. You just see the way that sexual trauma affects somebody and the way that it changes their personality. And when you hear this woman's story, you see the way this article, I'm not going to really go way into it, but it's, I'm just going to tell you some of the articles to pick out of that show notes, but MercuryNews.com, Christine Blasey Ford feared an avalanche of attacks if she went public about Kavanaugh, friends say. And this article just basically is her friends that she opened up to about this, clearly said, she said, talk to him, go ahead. And you really get a picture of somebody who is affected by this moment in her life, and they seem to be genuine character witnesses for her. Blasey told a friend, Jim Gensheimer, I've been trying to forget this all my life, and now I'm supposed to remember every little detail, one of those friends, Jim, recalled Blasey saying. They're going to be all over me. One of her friends, I can't really think of anyone better to endure the grueling questions she is sure to face, Rebecca White says, one of her neighbors. She's one of those people who... did I get this wrong? She's one of those people who... Well, I don't know why this didn't print right. I'm sorry. It's really... she's one of those good people that teams with honesty and truth. She's just that person. One woman who she's become friends with shared her Me Too story about being raped in a similar situation on Facebook as a teenager. And the woman says, she reached out to me afterwards supporting me and my story and that she had something happen to her when she was really young and that the guy was a federal judge, White said. She said she had been assaulted. She said hers had been violent as well, physically scary, fighting for her life. What, my mics? Yeah. It's just how it is. It works for... Tell him to listen to the regular podcast. So she told the woman that he's a super powerful guy and he might be a contender for a Supreme Court position one day. There's one friend says, there's absolutely no way it's made up. She can't even go home. She had to have her kids stay somewhere else. She had to shut down all social media. Why would she do that? Lemmy Roth worried that the attack wasn't an actual rape. It's not going to do any good, she said. Blaze was debating whether or not to come forward. It wasn't an actual rape, she said. Do I want to put myself through this? As far as I know, Limeroth said, she was up and down about whether she was going to go public with her name, but her husband encouraged her and that he was fine with it too, and she should. Said that she met... Limeroth said she is convinced Blasey Ford didn't mistake Kavanaugh. The two families traveled in the same social circles, and the alleged incident at the party wasn't her first time meeting him. Blasey Ford grew up in the suburbs of D.C., the daughter of Bush conservative parents, a former photographer with the Bay Area News Group who befriended Blasey Ford when their kids were just training as junior lifeguards. Blasey Ford's claim to fame as a teenager was on the local diving team. She escorted diver Greg Louganis to the White House in 1980 when Jimmy Carter invited Olympians to discuss the boycott of the Moscow Games. Small world. She told Gensheimer that she struggled academically late in high school. Now, this is a clear sign of someone who's gone through trauma that is undealt with. And I resemble this, too. That she struggled academically late in high school and early in college before pulling herself together and going on to become a psychology professor at Palo Alto University. as well as a Pacific Graduate School of Psychology, a consortium with Stanford University. She earned a psychology undergraduate degree from the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, master's degree at Pepperdine and Stanford, and a PhD in educational psychology at USC, according to her LinkedIn page. Her husband, an engineer, and their two sons are all surfers. So, you know, they eat organic, and so she says, the Blasey Ford aligned herself with liberal causes, and it will certainly add tension to her appearance before the committee. I worry about that, and I wonder if she does too, White said. Obviously, if she was the girl who had any track record of political perspective, she didn't have it, then that would definitely be better. But anyone who would be able to speak authoritatively in front of scary people, those people usually have opinions and support one another. A young 15-year-old girl, her friend Kay says, never has a voice, never knows what to do, is embarrassed, frightened, and scared. The timeline in my mind means nothing. So, she and her friend were on a beach when she first told him about having sent a letter about the alleged assault to her congressman, and that she left a tip on the Washington Post hotline. A few days later, when they met again with another parent at a Capitola restaurant overlooking the beach, Blasey Ford worried that she had ruined her life, basically. She started having second thoughts, Gensheimer said, like, oh my God, what have I done? The two were watching their young lifeguard trainees muster up the courage for a mid-season ritual, jumping off the end of a pier. She told her friend Gensheimer, I just want to jump off the pier. Why can't we jump off the pier? And it looks like she's taking the plunge, the writer says. So, you know, here's a person who doesn't seem crazy or off kilter or, you know, like some of the women who accused Bill Clinton that conservatives believe wholeheartedly had much, much sketchier backgrounds than this woman did. So, where I come down on it, you're talking about some of the effects, and this is another great article that, and I want you guys to weigh in here, so stop me if you have something that you'd like to say about that particular article about this woman.
What gets me is, like, it's scary. It's like the econ major who's dead broke. If this person who's gone through and did all this studying about psychology and the mind, and she's stumbling behind this, heck luck do the rest of us have?
Well, that's sort of why people go into it. Yeah. And that's why the therapist always has therapists.
Yeah.
Because they spend so much time obsessing over all this stuff that they themselves get involved in it. You know, but...
Right.
So...
Well, I'm just saying, like, yeah, like what the...
Yes, and some of those things that you pointed out and that article pointed out are things that a prosecutor would try to present to a jury if this was a criminal trial to try and corroborate that this person's worthy of belief. She's right. Not just making it up. So the polygraph wouldn't come in. But when you look at the way she acts, the fact that she doesn't really want to come forward, those are all normal behavior for a victim.
Yeah.
And then the you know, with regard to there being some details that she can't remember from that long ago, 36 years ago, versus details that she does remember that could be cooperative or might not be, depending on how an investigation comes out.
All right. So this article is another great article that gives you a lot of insight into some of this stuff, especially into her. A former sex crimes prosecutor analyzed Ford's allegations against Kavanaugh. Here's her take. Now, this is from the Washington Post, The Fix. Again, in the show notes. So let me try and see if I can scan this and pick some of the stuff out. They do a lot of setup. So basically, they're talking to Linda Fairstein, former chief of the Manhattan District Attorney's Office of Sex Crimes Bureau. I stand to believe there's no such thing as a he said, she said case. As a prosecutor, it's your job to break down every minute of the encounter so the details on one side pushes the facts over the edge. So presumably, you know, you being a former prosecutor, your job is not to, like, it's not so binary of he said or she said. It's like, let's get down into the weeds. Let's figure out exactly what both of you say about this instance. And then if it pushes us over one way or the other, charge yeah. or not charge, that's so, where you that's and, where you really
and this
find
is
out.
Why I really believe that the only defense to this at this point is for him to go Clarence Thomas on it. Outside of the high-tech lynching because he doesn't qualify for that.
Right.
No, she's like quarter, 16th black.
But the, you know, just this never happened.
Right.
That has to be his defense because anything else, he's going to get caught up on some of these details.
In the details, yeah. Well, and it may be his truth that he didn't do it because he doesn't remember it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's very possible.
It was very traumatic for her. It was another night drinking with the boys for him.
Right. And he may not even remember this particular incident. It's not even in his brain, you know, which is a scary thought, which is why really what it comes down to is don't drink to excess. Especially if you're a younger person listening, parties are not a good idea in high school and college, to be honest.
Yeah, and that's also a reason for the goal of our liquor laws is because that's when kids start experimenting with booze. They start experimenting out with their friends and while they can't, you know, be around responsible parents. If you allow kids to drink when they're, you know, at the home and can experiment with the parents, you know, they will know, like, whoa, 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 I've known myself. 2 glasses of wine right now. That's all I'm doing.
Right. Prosecutors do that regularly in large part by parsing what's reasonable and what's believable through corroboration, details that have the ring of truth and inconvenient facts that are subtle signs of credibility. So, ring of truth doesn't seem to me, Craig, to be like a very good standard, you know, or inconvenient facts that are subtle signs of credibility. Like, what does that mean, those subtle signs that give you credibility when you're trying to decide who's telling the truth or not?
That's the, this has really impacted her. This is, you know, something that she's told her friends. She's told her therapist. So the prosecutors always try to bring in the cry out witness, the first person that she's told the story to. What was her demeanor as she's telling the story? From the defense side, we're focusing on how consistent the various different times she's told the story is.
Right.
Now, a good prosecutor can deal with that through whether it be through argument to the jury or bringing in the other witnesses that say that, well, this is how she was when she told it to me. This is how it came out. Those are all details that tend to corroborate that this is not something she just dreamt up.
Right. Gotcha. Pull that mic a little closer to you because when you're like me, you're very expressive, and so your jacket is like wisping. So I can hear it on my end. But
go a few more degrees, and you wouldn't need the jackets.
It's 93 degrees outside, and that's not an exaggeration. It's 66 in here. They're wearing jackets.
66.
66. Yeah. I turned it up a degree for you. The second you walk out, it will go down to 65.
The basement is warmer.
You will end up there if you don't stop. There's no criminal trial, but Kavanaugh still has the presumption of innocence, said Attorney Douglas Wigdor, a former prosecutor who now represents victims in sexual harassment and sexual assault cases against high-profile men. The reason we have statutes of limitations, he says, is because it's difficult to defend yourself when someone makes accusations against you from years ago. It's difficult to have witnesses or forensics. And there's no possible way, and that's probably why the FBI turned it down. Like, there's no possible way for them to really have any forensic evidence or, you know, even if you go back and talk to the other two guys who were downstairs, what'd you hear? Nothing. You know, or this to me hinges on Mark Judge. He seemed to be lucid enough to consistently go back. If you hear in a couple of these articles, he's going back and forth saying, get her, man, get her. Wait, and let's not do this. Eventually he jumps on them and to push him off of her. He seemed to be reasonable enough, and yet he's not being called to testify, which, in my opinion, I don't know why he should be. If he's someone who this really hinges on this guy, why are we not going to talk to him under the threat of perjury? And that's really what it comes down to. Put yourself under oath, all three of you. Let's hear what you have to say under the threat of perjury. You know, because this could be disqualifying for Kavanaugh for the district court that he's on. I mean, his whole career could be completely over if this next couple weeks doesn't go well for him. But according to Fairstein, it was completely normal that Ford didn't remember several details. If she testifies, she said, I would expect her to say I don't remember scores of times, Fairstein said, for two reasons, the passage of time and trauma. She found this experience so upsetting that she felt her life was in danger. There might be 220 things she doesn't know, and then a very specific sentence about what happened that was so traumatic. According to psychologist Ann Metzler, It may be challenging to recall peripheral details of an assault years later, but such as who spread the word of the party, who was the designated driver, but that should not detract from a victim's veracity, meaning truth, if she can clearly and consistently articulate central details of what happened, such as the who, the what, the when, and the where. She told the Post. She said she had not reviewed the case. Perhaps more striking are the details Ford did mention. Fairstein said sexual assault rarely happens with witnesses present, yet Ford puts two people in the room. Kavanaugh and his prep school classmate, Mark Judge, whom she called an essential witness. She says, "To me, it's compelling that Ford put someone else there and that the person who happens to be in the room has a blackout drinking problem," said Fairstein. Judge, now a filmmaker and author, describes himself similarly in the book Wasted Tales of a Gen X Drunk. That's sort of the intoxicated behavior she described that night. Ford mentioned details like the pool party, the narrow staircase, that the house was in Montgomery County. There are enough facts for someone to remember if it was their party in their house. Wigdord echoed Fairstein's comment, saying, "She put a third person in the room. If you were making something up, why would you do that?" She also voluntarily took and passed a lie detector test. Walnut, and we've covered that. So,
narrow staircase, you just mean New England?
Yeah. Well, this was Virginia, I think. So the vast majority of sexual abuse victims delay disclosing what happened. It's one of the most common features of child sex abuse, Metzler says. Most victims of child sexual abuse fear retaliation, that they won't be believed or that their family may be angry. There are often very intense feelings of shame, guilt, and humiliation. Statistically, teenagers are less likely than younger children to tell authorities about an assault, she said. Particularly concerned with how others view them, teenagers often feel like quote-unquote damaged goods. I have personally had several female friends who had an experience similar to this use the word damaged goods. And that led to promiscuous behavior in college because, I'm not a virgin anymore. I'm damaged goods, so whatever. And they reenact the trauma over and over and over because they're damaged goods. So it's another reason children don't disclose, because they are sometimes threatened or pressured to keep it a secret, Metzler said, although that's not something that's in this case. Disclosure is a process, she says. It's possible that at some point a victim is unable to deal with the emotional burden of the abuse, which has frequently long lasted into adulthood. She debated whether to come forward, although she... So I think it helps Ford that there was an outcry to the counselor long before this nomination occurred. We always look for that to support an accusation that wasn't a newly formed complaint, Fairstein said. So, you know, it's important for women to speak up when it happens for a multitude of reasons. First and foremost, for them. Because when a trauma happens, you have to understand that it's not your fault. It is not something that you deserved or caused or anything else. It is something that you must tell the most close people in your life about, because it matters. It matters because they can then help you get help. Because what happens is when you go through trauma, it packs into your lizard brain. It packs into your mind. And if you don't deal with that trauma, then it starts to affect your behavior subconsciously. And then you end up, like me, doing things that ruin your life in your 20s. And then it takes you till 33 to get your stuff together because you never dealt with all that trauma. Second, if you're ever in a situation like this and it's somebody who ends up having power or has a consistent record of abuse, he does not. I mean, he just has no record of abuse or being other than a stand-up guy, according to many of the people in his life. Dozens of people repeatedly say this guy's a good guy. And the fact is that when it comes to these sorts of, like, everybody kind of knew Harvey Weinstein was a scumbag. Like, the comedy community always knew about Louis C.K. and Bill Cosby. This guy does not have that kind of reputation. So that's one point in his favor. That's one data point that shows that this was a one-off incident, if it happened at all. But the reality is that sometimes you have an instance with a person like this, and then they continue to abuse you, and mentally, if not physically, again. And so other people can help you get out of that situation. And so enforce your police department to process the rape kit, because a stunning amount of police departments will not process rape kits. If at some point in the future you feel like pursuing this as a criminal charge against your abuser, you have to have physical evidence to really have a slam dunk case. And so that has to be done very close to the actual incident.
Yes. 48, this 72 hours, is, depending on the department's policy, it's too late.
Right.
And even if you don't know that you want to go forward, like you said, have it done. And then, you know, you can decide later. Statute of limitations on a crime like this is a long time.
Right.
But at least you have the physical evidence preserved. And the other point I wanted to make is that the I lost my train of thought.
Oh, I was going to say, like, with the what Chris was talking about, the whole rape kit thing. Another reason why the police departments aren't testing those rape kits, because they're too busy testing marijuana, cocaine, all these other drugs.
Right.
So if you want rape kits tested, they've got to stop looking for flowers and stuff like that, like people getting high.
Right.
Let's go after these crimes where they have victims. That's what I want. That's what police departments should be doing.
Yeah.
You know, it's they're too busy trying to bust, you know, idiots smoking weed and trying to test that than trying to get these like these serial rapists are out there.
Yeah.
And they can't, we don't find them out until years later when they finally get around, like, all right, let's go test that rape kit now.
The importance of having the physical evidence, if there are any, is that you're less likely to have to testify in front of a jury.
Right.
If you have physical evidence and other corroborating evidence, because the defense attorney will advise his client to plead.
Yeah.
If the longer you wait and the less evidence they have, the more they're going to chance a trial, and then you have to be put through a cross-examination.
Yeah, I think it, and if you're a man or a woman who has been a victim of sexual abuse, you know, childhood abuse or later in life, seek help for it. I mean, there is no shame in opening up about it, talking to your friends and family about it, talking to your closest loved ones. I can tell you the trauma that I've experienced in my life, it's not been sexual abuse, but there, you know, I just, like, I think back to something so massive in my mind was saying that I didn't feel worthy of love, like, which is such a, like, to me, such a silly thing for me to say, like, or for me to, like, I couldn't say that out loud, like, because it was just too hard to admit that I had that inside of me. But that's just such a very common human emotion, but it was just like, it was just emotional constipation around that, you know. And obviously this is much bigger, but you know, the people in my life that have come forward about this stuff, you know, if you're, especially if you're a man and you were abused as a child, it can be incredibly shameful inside of your brain. But outside of your brain, when you're talking to people that love and care about you, it is not shameful to them. They may not know how to process it. They may not know what to do for you. They may not know how to react. But it certainly is not something that they think less of you for. It's something that opens up an enormous amount of empathy for you. And so, men or women, if you've been through any kind of sexual trauma or any kind of trauma at all, open up about it. Your life will be immensely better. And, you know, this woman, this clearly affected her. And, you know, according to her friends and to her. And so it is something that I think we should take seriously, that we should move forward with. I never answered the question about what I would do. If I were a senator, you know, Anita Hill in that op-ed said, you know, here's the things that need to be done. Refrain from pitting the public interest in confronting sexual harassment against the need for a fair confirmation hearing, she writes. Our interest in the integrity of the Supreme Court and in eliminating sexual misconduct, especially in our public institutions, are entirely compatible. Both are aimed at making sure that our judicial system operates with legitimacy. Second, select a neutral investigative body with experience in sexual misconduct cases that will investigate the incident in question and present its findings to the committee. Outcomes in such investigations are more reliable and less likely to be perceived as tainted by partisanship. Senators must then rely on the investigators' conclusions along with advice from the experts to frame the questions they ask Judge Kavanaugh and Dr. Blasey. Again, the senators' fact-finding roles must guide their behavior. The investigators' report should frame the hearing, not politics or myth, about sexual assault. Do not rush these hearings. You know, one person wrote an article saying, we're not in the 11th hour. People keep saying this was an 11th hour attack. There's no time limit on this. There, people are trying to rush it for the elections, but at the end of the day, the clock reset when this came up. And we don't need to be in such a massive hurry. I shut the door. I bet you a cat is stuck in that laundry room.
Probably. Would you mind opening that? That's what it sounds like.
Would you mind opening that door for me, please?
I do mind. They probably messed with the microphones.
No, it's Muffin. She's going to be scared out of her mind. And finally, refer to Anita Hill writes, refer to Christine Blasey Ford by her name, not Judge Kavanaugh's accuser. You know, and she had a lot of anger towards the senators because they were the ones who were trying to ascertain the truth while grandstanding for television.
Yes.
And that is a big problem. And so it does not surprise me that Blasey Ford has asked for the FBI or some impartial group to interact on some of this stuff. For me, does it disqualify him from the Supreme Court if it is true? The foundational principle of Western society is that you own your own body and that you do not have the right to attack someone else's body. You do not have the right to steal from them, to physically harm them, to hurt them in any way, defraud them, lie to them. Was it a cat?
I have no idea. Nothing okay. came out.
Weird. And so it is disturbing that you'd have a Supreme Court justice who may, from his very base impulse, not understand that basic principle that he doesn't own the body of another person. But I will say the track record of his life thus far as we know, shows that he has not continued this. So it is... It is to me, is it disqualifying? I don't know yet. I want to know more. Mm-hmm. It's pretty close. Like, it's like, there's going to have to be like a real good explanation or a real good defense for me to want to vote for this guy. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know, because it's such a, it to me is, it's not a pubic hair in a Coke can. To me, that was always just like a, like, I remember being a kid going, this is stupid. This is a very dumb thing. I was like 7.
Yeah.
You know, and is it right? Is it appropriate? If Clarence Thomas had done that, no. But at the same time, it's not attempted rape. Like, what she's outlining in this Washington Post article is very serious. And so to not take it seriously, to me, is just intellectually dishonest. And tribalism and partisanship of the worst nature. Like, it diminishes her humanity. It diminishes the humanity of women. It diminishes the culture and sends a message to young men that is inappropriate. And so when I see people just blanket defending this, I just get a little angry about it because it's bad for the country. It's bad for society. Like, to not take so seriously something so serious, it's just not good. So that's where I'm at. Final thoughts on the Kavanaugh stuff. I will continue to update on a daily basis, probably, on the Chris Spangle Show about this, depending on what pops up. So if you don't listen to the Chris Spangle Show, please do. It's 20 minutes, 20, 30 minutes a day. It's basically like the last 2 hours truncated into 20 minutes about a single issue. So make sure that you check that out. Final thoughts on that, Chris?
You know, I was just thinking, back in 1991, the Democrats actually did control the Senate, so it wasn't as tribalist at that time. But as we discussed earlier, the other difference is that we know so much more about these type of things now.
Yeah.
And like you said, it's not a pubic hair on a Coke can. If he did it the way that she's describing it, then yeah, he's disqualified from being on the Supreme Court. And like you said, even his current job.
Yeah. Harry, final thoughts?
With me, I'm going to withhold judgment until, like, if we can hear from that third person that was in the room. I hear too many different cases and go through so much stuff like this to really make a decision, but my gut reaction is, like, I have no idea. I've got no evidence. other than like a testimony of stuff like that. So, and if me personally, if I was a senator on that board, I'd automatically vote no for anyone that wasn't me. So,
what?
I would clear the. I'd get rid of the judges, not allowing any to be filled.
Can you move to Kauai and be on my juries?
Yeah, no kidding. Jury nullification all the way.
All the way, bro. I'm gonna get rid of the judges by not allowing any. None shall pass.
So let's move on. We'll do this kind of quick. I want to give this story, the Botham Shenjin story out of Dallas. I think is one of the. It's the worst police shooting that we've heard in the last few years. Like, Philando Castile was pretty bad.
Yeah,
that was. But awful. This is just so beyond the pale. And I want to be mad at the cop, but I have to be mad at the police department as much as I am the cop, for reasons I'll explain in a moment. But so let me give some facts before we start ranting about this. So the New York Times on the 14th wrote a great article, Dallas police officer shot her neighbor and a city is full of questions. Botham Shenjin analyzed risk for a living at a global auditing firm. For someone in his line of work, the evening was shaping up to be as risk-free as it gets, alone in his one-bedroom apartment, one block from the Dallas Police Department headquarters. Fresh from work, he had texted his sister his evening plans, watching football on TV, the Eagles versus the Falcons. He texted a friend apologizing for not going out with her the weekend before. Mr. Jean, I think it's Jean, 26, was from the island nation of St. Lucia. He had a big smile and was a big eater, winning a meat lovers contest at a big chef steakhouse back in the Caribbean. He still had his ticket for a free meal on his next visit, his prize after eating a 2-pound steak in one sitting. Unit 1478 on the fourth floor of the Southside Flats apartment complex was an 800-square-foot bachelor pad. Dishes piled up in the sink with pancake syrup, dish soap, and other belongings adding to the clutter on the kitchen island. It was the evening of September 6th. His 27th birthday was 3 weeks away. In a matter of hours, Mr. Jean would be dead. A white off-duty police officer who lived in Unit 1378, directly below Mr. Jean, claimed that she mistakenly entered the wrong apartment after returning home from her 14-hour shift and believed Mr. Jean, who is black, was an intruder. Officer Amber R. Geigen, 30, fired her service weapon twice, striking him in the torso. He was later pronounced dead at the hospital. So they go on to talk about racial profiling and a lot of that stuff. You know, this is, first and foremost, as they talk about this in the article, you know, the family, for their part, a lawyer for the family said, first they assassinate his person, then they assassinate his character. Hours earlier that evening, managers at the apartment complex had received complaints from residents that there was a strong smell of marijuana in the fourth floor hallways. Managers knocked on Mr. Jean's door and at least five others, inquiring about the smell. No one fessed up. It was not known whether Officer Geiger's apartment was searched. Mr. Jean's relatives, lawyers, and supporters all say it would have been difficult for the officer to have mistaken Mr. Jean's door. It had a large, bright red, semicircular doormat laying on bare concrete. Officer Geiger had none. Would she not have noticed? My main concern is that she's lying, Mr. Merritt, one of Jean's family lawyers said. But Officer Geiger's supporters say that she had her hands full at the time as she arrived at Mr. Jean's door. Officials said she had with her her police vest, duty box, and lunchbox. Items she had expected to carry to her own front door, not someone else's. So the one officer basically says, you know, you can't. Here, I think here he is. Let's see here. Sorry, I didn't highlight this. I should have. Officer Geiger was involved in another shooting last year. A man grabbed her taser during a confrontation, and she shot him in the stomach. The man survived, and a grand jury later declined to indict her. She didn't have any complaints against her. One person said, you cannot have people working that hard and not have a mistake, and it can be life-threatening mistakes in the police business. So, and I think that's right. Like, you have somebody who is a police officer working a 14-hour shift. And so, What you have to understand about police work is that it's in hypervigilance. You're just constantly vigilant all the time. You know, and the Dallas PD had the incident where multiple police officers were assassinated a year ago. And so there's already a sense of paranoia, I'm sure, in that department. And so police officers are just hypervigilant when they're on duty, and to the point that when they're zoned out when they're off duty, they still are a little hypervigilant, and they come home and they kind of veg in their chair and they just kind of sit there and watch TV and just kind of decompress because they can't engage with the world because their brain has to reset from that amount of linear thinking and engaged in that kind of thinking. And this is not a defense for her, but this is an explanation. You know, you have someone who is hypervigilant for 14 hours straight. That's a tremendous amount of taxation on your body, your nervous system, your brain. Your energy is completely depleted when you're making your brain work that hard. And so you're not going to notice the little details. Any one of us who are up for 14 hours, let alone working at that level for 14 hours, are going to make mistakes at the end of the day. And when you're dealing with people who have guns and who are naturally spending 90% of their time around the 10 worst percent of the people, are ultimately going to make the decision to shoot first and ask questions next because that's what they're trained to do. And so I really put the death, not this to me was not a racially motivated shooting. This was bad police department policy causing a life-ending accident. And the police department, I would tell the Jean family, sue the crap out of them, you know, because this is something that this officer should not have been working for 14 hours.
Correct.
And then on top of it, to the next day have a search warrant issued for his apartment for narcotics and pot in an attempt to smear his character. Mm-hmm. Is an absolute abuse of their power and incredibly just BS, man. So your thoughts on all this?
So in fact, she was allowed to leave, make a phone call, do all these other things. That's the biggest problem most people have is the special treatment. With you're right, the department having someone do a shift for 14 hours, if she couldn't do that, those last hours, then how safe was the public those last, 12 hours that she was on her shift?
Exactly.
I think every interaction of those, so when people talk about like how they view the police department as like, you know, possible interaction, but the other thing, what else has happened? What was she doing these 14 hours on her shift? Was she doing patrol? Was she doing desk work? Did she ask for this overtime? Because it's going to get overtime by the city, and why was the city paying overtime? Clearly, they could hire more police department. They could hire more police to do different things. People are looking for jobs. The thing with it is most police shootings, like, I don't really see as just being racist, just more of a bad policies on the police and then being yes. allowed to be able to shoot first and ask questions later. It's not all about – it's not – and most – 90%, I want to go more, or 99% of this, it's not about race. It is just, and the biggest issue most people have with these police action shootings are that the police are just treated differently. There's separate rules for them. If anyone, now the whole, like, I work 14 hours, you know, as any, like, explanation, that makes sense, but I know factory workers who work 14 hours and they don't shoot anyone or go in the wrong spot. I know people who work third shift at gas station who are hyper-vigilant the entire 14 hours, just when they work third shift at 14 hours, being alone on the side of highways and dealing with the worst of the worst of people. And they don't shoot anybody. They manage to not shoot anyone and go back to the right house.
True.
Yeah, your thoughts?
My thoughts are you brought up a couple of important issues. One is that, you know, when you have a officer-involved shooting, you have two investigations going. You have the criminal investigation, and then you have the employment investigation.
Mm-hmm.
And because of the most departments' union contracts, they are entitled to the counsel immediately.
Right.
And so, yeah, it's normal for them to walk out of there.
Mm-hmm.
She, for instance, was not arrested until correct. Like the next day.
Yeah,
you know, she. Yeah. That's just one example. Mm-hmm. If the roles were reversed, he would mm-hmm. have been in handcuffs immediately.
Yeah,
if he's
the roles
lucky.
Were reversed,
lucky
right,
got the handcuffs.
They would have had to have advised them of Miranda, but do their best to make it sound like he doesn't need an attorney, and hope that he doesn't ask for one. But in her case, it's like they have to let her call one,
right?
Again, because of the union contracts and everything. The second thing is, you said she was the crap out of the department. You brought up how most of these police shootings, they are treated special. They have immunities that make suing the department or an officer so difficult. I mean, it's like anything that an ordinary citizen would have done and their insurance company would write a check the next day. You know, the city or whatever government agency is going to fight it because they know that they have so much immunity about all of these things.
Right.
And then the other thing is, you know, yeah, they probably could hire more police officers and not have one work 14 hours. But it goes back to what you said earlier about the other issue, which is the drug war.
Yeah.
That's what they're spending a lot of their time on. A lot of the overtime and everything is being spent on fighting the drug war. You could have enough officers to work normal shifts, patrolling and investigating real crime.
Yep. That's what I said. Like, and also what's going on to that, like, that 14-hour day, you know? Did she work 4 hours at private security, making double handling money like the cops in Southport? They work in security for that an apartment complex somewhere? And you're right. Like, that's what I was talking about. Like, the biggest problem that most people have is the immunities. And that's why people just don't understand. And that's why, like, I always get, like, frustrated and with dealing with police officers when people try to tell me, like, how bad they've got them. Like, no. No, come on. Like, if the roles were reversed, he would be lucky if he made it to handcuffs, because most of the each time someone shoots a police officer, criminals know that you shoot a cop, it's a death sentence. They're coming to kill you. They're coming to shoot you dead.
Yeah.
I remember when a cop was shot, and we were sitting at the gas station with my wife, and then they pulled in. Like, it was like, I don't know what was going on with that. Tank pulled in, a ton of things, because they were looking for this guy. And they're like, one of ours got shot. I mean, they were just like, okay, calm down. Right? You don't see me going after, because, you know, someone shot, like, a gas station attendant, something like that. Or you didn't see the Papa John's going to neighborhoods because they shot, like, one of their delivery drivers here in the east side of Indianapolis. That didn't happen.
Right.
That's what gets me when people try to do that. But I see that different. But I try to have empathy for that. But at the end of the day, it's just like, these are choices that are made, and that just doesn't sit right.
Yeah.
Nothing feels right about this whole thing.
Yeah. There's a lot of details we don't know about. I mean, how long has she lived in that apartment? How close are they to each other? How exactly did she mistake it? What was his reaction to seeing her?
So she apparently she parked on the fourth floor instead of the third floor like normal. She lives in the apartment below him. They had no relationship. When she was trying to get in, screamed, "Let me in." And then he didn't say anything. And then when he came in, she shot because she saw the silhouette of a black man there. And he said, "Oh, my God, why did you do that?" So the confusing thing is, why are you screaming, "Let me in," to your own apartment? So, yeah, there's some stuff here that just doesn't make any sense. And I think she's on the hook for murder, for manslaughter, at least. I think she's been charged with manslaughter.
Yes.
But it does. It doesn't make any sense. And it is, you know, they're just senseless tragedies that you try to prevent, and changing the amount of hours that police officers work can change that.
Mm-hmm.
But police departments are already, because they're government agencies and have limited funds, they're already overworking their people. And it's like there's always going to be police shootings.
They have plenty of money.
Right.
You know,
plenty of money.
It's funny you say that, Chris, because as a prosecutor, I dealt with it was on the governor's committee on crime, which basically doled out law enforcement grants from the federal government. And because the grants do not let you hire people without matching funds, they generally wanted special projects to pay officers overtime. to go detect and destroy marijuana trees or plants or, you know, process rape kits or whatever. Right. Mm-hmm. So they, it's like they have...
That was Mitten slamming the door. She's upset that she wasn't able to participate in the show.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry.
So they have a lot of...
Craig thought that the police were barging in and he was done for. I go to Indiana and then some sheriff... So final thoughts on this.
Yeah, it's the special projects that they get paid for. Like, but they have money. They get money from the... they get kicks for the... for towing your cars because you've parked illegally, especially in Dallas. They get money for when they confiscate all kinds of what is it? What's that term? I'm having a brain fart. I need to drink more coffee. when they confiscate money from people from drug busts,
acid forfeiture.
Yeah. When they confiscate money that way, when they confiscate cars, then they do police auto auctions. They have money.
Yeah,
but they buy toys.
Right,
they buy toys, you know, and they get overtime. They, especially Dallas. Do you not you think they don't get money for working security at the stadium each time?
Yeah,
yeah.
They get money. They have plenty of money to hire more stuff like that. That's what I said. Once this case gets all and the all information gets out, I would really be curious to the breakdown of her 14-hour day.
Yeah,
that's what I want to see. I want when this gets to trial and you get to see that timeline of her 14-hour day. That will be very, very interesting because there's so many do cops that do this double dipping of I'm being a police officer, but I'm also going to work security down here at this apartment complex.
Well, the end of the day, the worst. Like the worst part was him getting killed, obviously, yes. But the way that they behave in getting the search warrant for his place and not hers just shows you the to me that was the abuse of authority like none other, where they're going to intentionally smear the guy to get the back the blue people to just go, well, he smoked pot, so the F what, in the privacy of his own home, and then she came in without an invite, you know, like. So all right. I'm getting tired, so we need to.
Well, she broke in. How do we know she didn't bring the pot?
Right.
What? She was in that apartment with a dead man.
Right.
For how long?
That's exactly. It's a great point, Craig.
So generally speaking, every state is different, but murder one is premeditated.
Mm-hmm.
Murder two is knowingly killing another. Manslaughter is like recklessly causing the death of another.
Yeah.
So that's what they've charged her with.
Yeah.
We need to make that a drop next time any case like this comes up.
So in the undercover news, almost every day. You know, it can't be every day because I have to live life at some point, and I can't follow the news as closely as I normally do. But I've been posting a bunch of news articles at WeAreLibertarians.com. Undercover news is news that you're not going to see on CNN because they're too busy talking about two issues. And so at the end of the show, we like to give you a couple of those. And first, Lisa Page bombshell, FBI couldn't prove Trump-Russia collusion before Mueller appointment. This is from The Hill. To date, Lisa Page's infamy has been driven mostly by the anti-Donald Trump text messages she had with Peter Strzok. Yet when history judges the former FBI lawyer years from now, her most consequential pronouncement may not have been typed on her Samsung smartphone to Peter Strzok. Rather, it might be eight simple words she uttered behind closed doors during a congressional interview a few weeks ago. It's a reflection of us still not knowing, Page told Rep. John Ratcliffe of Texas when questioned about the text she and Strzok exchanged in May 2017 as Robert Mueller was being named special counsel. With that statement, Page acknowledged a momentous fact. After 9 months of using some of the most awesome surveillance powers afforded to the U.S. intelligence, the FBI still has not made a case connecting Trump or his campaign to Russia's election meddling. Page opined further, acknowledging it still existed in the scope of possibility that there would be literally nothing. As of May 2017, we couldn't answer those questions. So you only appoint a special prosecutor when you have the goods. This was a hunting expedition, literally a witch hunt. Like, yeah. Donald Trump, as much as I hate to say it, is right. This from Roll Call today. Obscure Pentagon fund nets $2 billion, sets pork senses tingling. Where supporters see a way to bankroll innovative programs that the military may not even know it needs, critics see pork by another name. The Pentagon will soon have received about $2.3 billion in the last 9 years, money the military never requested, for a special fund intended to help replace earmarks after Congress banned them, our analysis shows. Buried deep inside the $674.4 billion defense spending measure for fiscal 2019 that the Senate is expected to vote on this week is a chart with one line showing a $250 million appropriation for the Defense Rapid Innovation Fund, the latest installment of a sizable fund for a largely unknown program that quietly disperses scores of contracts every year. So, fiscal responsibility taking place there. So, please be sure to listen to the Chris Spangle Show. We want to make sure that you're listening to that. We're at 967 downloads on an episode from last week. We're almost to 1,000 downloads in the first 3 weeks.
I do recommend listening to the last two that just got dropped with Chris Spangle on Abdul. It was phenomenal. I think I listened to it twice.
I've got a couple lined up for the prison strike that's happening, and then Hillary Clinton talking about the Lesbians in Tech conference, where basically she's just fully integrating the Democratic Party and big tech and using them as her special ops to fight Republicans. It's a stunning clip. It's amazing. So that'll be in the coming days. Special thanks to our $100 a month Patreon subscribers, the Libertarian Coalition, Paul Jonathan Eads Jr., Christy Avery, Jason Doolittle, and of course, Craig DaCosta. Thank you so much. Your generous donations over the years, you know, equipment, money, all of that has really enabled us to grow into what we have, and hopefully you've had fun coming out, and we appreciate all of your contributions over the years.
I had lots of fun, and you're very much welcome, and I hope that you keep doing what you're doing.
Yes, I absolutely will. Much to the chagrin of everybody who isn't it, even the libertarians, you know. Mm-hmm. We'll keep doing this show as long as I have breath in my body.
Yeah, that's the idea.
Or money in my bank account.
More breath. You'd keep going even if you're going broke.
You're right. No, I did. Yeah. 2014 and 15 were rough.
We're libertarians in my luxury van down by the river.
Right. So we thank you guys. Man, there was something else I wanted to promote. I don't remember what it is, but I've said a lot here. We've said a lot tonight.
That guy's show in Philadelphia? No?
What? Oh.
Brian Nichols?
Brian Nichols. Good old Brian Nichols, yeah. We had our first research team call this weekend. Harry did not show up. Harry had the unmitigated gall to bitch about what software we were using and then didn't even show up because he was changing his muffler or some bullshit.
All right, so first off, you're right. I was not changing muffler. I was doing the timing on Bun Bun, my Subaru. Yes, I did complain about the software, the platform.
As you always do.
And I want to also be known that I have been pining for a meeting of everybody, too.
That's true. You have been the one that has been, oh, you need to do it. And then the first one, you don't even show up.
I would have showed Bun Bun would have been cooperative. Two, that old man Dan would have been satisfied with okay running. He kept taking the car apart because it wasn't perfect.
All right. Now, Craig, you've spent roughly 5 hours with Harry now. Do you ever have any idea what he's talking about?
I'd say about 50% of the time.
All right. Bun Bun, my Subaru. It's a white Subaru. It's got a little bun sticker on it. It's Bun Bun. It's its name. And the timing on it, right? What we had to do was get all the camshafts lined up with the time right with the crankshaft, right? So the valves will open and close at the same time because...
So, Craig, you brought us presents, did you?
Yes, I did. So I know that Harry's contract has been fulfilled as to a coffee maker.
That's true, yes.
And so I brought him some coffee.
Kauai coffee. Kauai. Kauai? Is that how you say Kauai?
Yeah.
Thank you, thank you.
There's kind of a... They call it an okina that separates the...
All right. Now, is this is this all pineapple flavored? What
no,
do we got here?
Not at all.
It's It's Hawaiian coffees. This is also why, like, a lot of Ethiopian coffee is really, really good, is because of the lava. It makes really good coffee beans.
Okay. All right. Yeah. I look forward to smelling it next week.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Now,
and then Chris.
Ooh.
Sort of macadamia nuts.
Ooh. Mauna? Mauna?
Mauna Loa.
Mauna Loa. All right. Oh. Island classics. Ooh. See, I love macadamia nuts. This is awesome. Thank you. I appreciate this. I like this. You know, people like Craig come to town and they bring us presents, Harry. This is...
What?
Thank you so much. And I'm so glad that you were able to come into town and make this work.
Oh, I'm glad it worked out. Yes.
Yeah. So and we appreciate you coming all the way from Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very cool to have you in town and finally meet you in person and get to hang out. And you got to tour the Boss Hog Studios. What'd you think?
Impressive.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a work in progress, but it seems to be a good plan.
Yeah.
You got a good space, and mm-hmm. they're going to make it work.
Now, what do you think about the We Are Libertarian Studios?
Not as impressive. However, your equipment is much better.
See this board?
You see how much bigger my board is?
Yeah.
See, what those guys don't have is the years of experience and equipment and debt that it took to get us to this point. They just walked away with 200 automatic listeners and all of the knowledge and then sold my board on top of it. And then they're sitting there going, oh, we got a better studio. It's like, yeah, because you don't have the overhead.
Right. And they didn't have to deal with the pain of starting a podcast out.
Right.
That's what a lot of people don't understand. Like, it's getting your getting the microphone, the board, recording it. Now that you've got this recording,
right?
What do you do with it? How do you host it? How do you get your RSS feed going?
If I canceled that, if I canceled them off the network, they'd be lost.
Yeah.
Now, Craig, who do you think I will kill first, Harry or Jeremiah?
Based on last night's dinner, I would say Jeremiah.
Okay. All right, good. That's a smart answer because Harry, in the listener surveys, people love Harry.
Mm-hmm.
I don't get it because I never know what he was talking about, but a good 50% of this audience loves Harry a lot. And the downloads are like twice what the Saturday shows are now.
Oh, good. Good.
So I shouldn't tell you that because we haven't signed the 2019 contract yet.
Yeah, I have to redo my 2019 contract. Get that ready.
They are going to be so mad at me at Wall Management.
Mm-hmm. Yes, they are.
Yeah. I've messed up.
Yeah, well, you got to stop buttering them up, too.
Well, they're very cute. All right. Craig, again, thank you. And thank you to all of our donors. Thank you to all of our Patreon subscribers. Listen, we couldn't do this at this point without you guys. We have grown to a point that is beyond what I ever expected. And you guys continue to put the word out there. I was talking to somebody at my birthday party. Craig, I got you a gift. I don't know if you can fit this on the plane, but I got you this present. It's a picture of Jeremiah and his wife. He's proposing. It's a little big, but it's really nice. So I wanted you to have that.
I saw this on Facebook.
It's a nice memento of your time in Indiana, so I hope that you enjoy that. Let us know if you need Harry to ship that to you. But I was talking to... someone there, and they were like, you know, whenever people talk, there's the buzz isn't around about We Are Libertarians the way that, like, whenever people go, what's your favorite podcast? In one of these groups or on a page, it's always Tom Woods or, you know, Jason Stapleton or Lions of Liberty even gets an honorary mention in there. But you guys don't get mentioned as much, but I know you tell the truth about your numbers because you post your numbers in the group. Like, and I don't get that, and I don't know why. And I said, because it's a lot of new people listening to the show. So it's a totally different audience. Let me see if I can find this. I should have had this prepared in the meantime. So, you know, we are very fortunate to have a different audience than a lot of those guys. And it's a very weird thing to have a different audience than other libertarian podcasts, but a good thing because a lot of our people are newer. And so when you are a We Are Libertarians patron, you're not talking to other libertarians because we don't do a show for libertarians. We do a show for everybody else. We talk about the news, about the things that people who are casually interested in politics might be interested in. And our goal is to basically hook them with topics everybody's talking about and then indoctrinate them along the way into libertarianism. If you're a longtime listener, you may be one of those people. And so the reason you should support our show by sharing the word, just spreading the word that, hey, this podcast exists, any one of our shows, We Are Libertarians, The Chris Spangle Show, Boss Hog of Liberty, The Brian Nichols Show, Tad Talk, Fundamental Freedoms, our new video series on Sundays at 8 p.m. on YouTube. These are designed for you to share with your friends information from a different point of view that's fun and entertaining and that will educate people so they sound smarter with their friends. Now, we set up a voicemail system because not everybody likes to write letters. And so sometimes people want to go and record voicemails. So a couple weeks ago, we got these three within like a day of each other, and they're really amazing. Our Patreon listeners have heard some of these. Harry's listened to them. I'm going to play one of these. I don't have their name. If they didn't say it, I'm not going to out them like Dianne Feinstein. Mm-hmm. But this is the impact that We Are Libertarians is having when, you know, we're putting out our content. So please continue to share so we can have this kind of impact.
Hey, I'm Woody. I'm a longtime listener, but I don't do the whole feedback thing. I was here, the editor at wearelibertarians.com, and tell us on Facebook, but I'm not exactly a writer guy. So I'm trying out this voice message thing, and it works. Anyway, I started listening when you did the cost episodes because, well, sure, I can get numbers and facts from other news sites, those interviews that you did with people whose lives have been messed up by the government. They really gave it the spark of humanity and, you know, made it matter. And thank you for show notes. Oh, my goodness. No one I talk to or argue with is going to listen to the podcast I send them to, especially the libertarian podcast. But when I've got a link to back up what I'm saying, boom, I can make a grounded argument. And when I got those links on the Jacksonville Landing shooting and the crisis in South Africa, I could copy, I could paste it. It would back me up. I actually changed minds because facts are how you do it. And it's all backed up with the information from social media and like 10 actual, real, credible sources. Thanks, because I bet it's quite a pain to type up all your notes, and thanks for getting interviews, devoting your time to the podcast. But twice a week I see that notification from Google Play, and it's awesome. You're awesome. You and Harry rock a lot, and thanks.
All right, thanks, Woody. Yeah, we do. It does take a lot of work to do all this stuff. It takes probably 20 hours a week, but I love doing it, and I love getting messages like that. I love arming you with the facts that you need to make reasonable decisions when you go and vote, when you get active in politics, when you talk to your friends, when you start converting them. Some of those people that you use those facts on, eventually you can get them to listen to the podcast. So in the long run, it does help grow the show, all of those show notes. But I put the show notes in there so you guys have the information. You can share the information. You can... What are you looking at?
Keep going. Sorry.
The cat is doing something crazy. And so that you can see that I'm not full of it, that I put a lot of effort into understanding exactly what I'm doing. I put a lot of research time into it. We've got a research team now, and they're putting a lot of time into it, and we're trying to really bring a different level to talk radio than you've ever heard from anybody else within all of talk radio, but also the libertarian space. And so when you see those threads, maybe start one of those threads and say, my favorite podcast is X, Y, and Z. You know, make sure that you check them out. What are yours? And post in our group that you've posted that, so then our friends can go and start saying We Are Libertarians too, because it's social proof. The more people that talk about We Are Libertarians on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, the more people are going to listen to the show, the more voice messages we're going to be able to create around that. So I ask you to help us grow and make sure that you're out there promoting the show, because we're working hard to make sure that you have all of that information. So thanks, Woody. And if you want to leave a voicemail, wearelibertarians.com, you'll see the little notification. Tell us why you listen, what you like about the show, why you're a patron member, Or if you have a question about politics or even life, you know, Harry and I, we know a lot about life. Craig has seen how successful we are now in person. Mm-hmm. And so we'll give you love advice. But yeah, if you have questions about libertarianism or politics, please leave your comment there. All right. Final thoughts for the episode. Harry, you first.
Let's see. With the Kavanaugh thing, I always tell people right now, just like most things, hold your decision off. Wait till you get more information. The other thing with it is, like, I think the best thing Republicans could probably do is put the prevent defense on and just, you know, run the clock out.
Yeah.
Run the clock out to the elections. That's the best move to do. With the Dallas shooting thing, it goes back to the difference of what I say, which it's never racial. The biggest problem is there's just different rules, different limitations, and that's the... That's the thing that gets people angry. That's what people don't understand, because they've seen stuff like this happen in their community, and there's like, wait a minute, this is not playing out the way I've seen it played out five different times with other people. This is completely different, and that's why they feel something is wrong. And the first thing they gravitate to is race, because they can. That's clearly visible, but that is not it.
Yep. Craig, final thoughts.
Ditto on both of those. Special request not to actually kill Jeremiah.
Oh, I won't. Okay. No, no.
And
his strength is that of an intellectually challenged bear. I couldn't take him if I wanted to. He's very strong.
No, but thanks for spending some time with me while I was here and letting me on the show. Had a good time last night. The show was fun as well. And just keep doing what you're doing, both of you. I mean, I think you're very informative with the entertainment, and I think it's doing a good job.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it, and thank you for all of your financial contributions. And, you know, because it's more than just money. I mean, the money that, you know, like, here's $100, here's $300, here, you know, like the equipment that goes into it to make it sound good. Someone commented on our Discord about, hey, is this the only libertarian podcast that doesn't sound like it was done in a tin can? We put a lot of effort into sounding good too, but your contributions, you especially over the years, you, Jason, Christy, and Phyllis Klosinski, those financial contributions came at a time when it was like, man, do I want to keep going? Oh, wow, somebody believes in what I'm doing. I'm going to work harder. And so the effect of supporting a podcast that you love, I'm not just talking about me, but I'm talking about any media brand that you like, especially a podcast, when you financially contribute to them through their wish list or Bitcoin donations or, you know, sending them a nice note, that buys them another couple weeks. Because it's not easy to do this as a side gig. When you've worked all day, you want to come home and you're like, I just want to watch TV. I don't want to do another show. But I got to read these notes. I got to put 2 hours into this so I don't sound stupid tomorrow. You know, but I'm going to do it because this person believes in what I'm doing.
Right.
That's the effect that you have. And you four, especially with your generosity, you're just like, it's very humbling and it's very appreciated, and I thank you so much for it. So, and thanks for all that you've done for us. So with that, we say thank you to Craig DaCosta. We say thank you to Harry Price. We say thank you even to Jeremiah Morrill over at the Boss Hog of Liberty. And we say thank you to you for listening. And hopefully you've got something out of this. If you did, please share it, rate and review in iTunes or Google Play. And join us on Patreon at WeAreLibertarians.com. And we will see you in... I'll see you tomorrow on the Chris Spangle Show. Harry, will see you next Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
Unless he does Loki Wall.
No, next Tuesday I'll be in California.
Oh, that's right. Oh,
I'll be in California.
You know what? I need to make this announcement.
Yeah.
I will be gone for the next week and a half because I've got to travel for work. I'll keep doing the Chris Spangle Shows this week. Well, at least the next couple days, and then probably sporadically next week. But I'll be in Orlando for work all next week, and I'll be in Louisville the next couple days. So I will be unable to do the show. Harry will be out of town, too, next week.
Correct.
And so what we're going to do is we're going to have some guest hosts.
Mm-hmm.
So we've already had the Boss Hog in the feed. Brian Nichols is going to do a show. Sarah Brady Wagner is going to do a show. Tad's going to do a show. And what I want to do is put those guys into the main feed so you hear how good their shows are, how good they're getting at their craft. So you'll go and subscribe to the other We Are Libertarian shows, and I want to give them a little love. So since I don't have the ability to do the show because I'll be on the road, There's still going to be some content in your feed, and so I hope that you will give them the same listenership that you give us, and you'll see the great work that they're putting into their shows. So, but we will return in 2 weeks. Harry and I will be here holding hands, mm-hmm. Fighting about something, like two little brothers.
It's not fighting. It's just more of suggestions.
Well, you suggest things to me, and then I suggest you kill yourself. All right, guys. We'll see you in a couple weeks. I'll see you on The Chris Spangle Show. And please listen to our other shows, and we'll talk to you soon. 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 And we'll talk to you soon.